to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I hope you're awake. It's pretty nice down here in the swamps. It's a little chilly. About the coolest we had so far. I don't particularly care for the cool. That's why I live in the south. You people up there get snow. I don't want no part of snow. Well, got Lizzie over there on Studio B. She's got a good show over there about spirituality and stuff. I figured I'd do something about that. Here's some. This is about past life regressions. And I thought it was kind of interesting. We'll get it going, and then we'll get these phone lines open. So here we go.
Which is why I always say, if you know why you're here, do it now, because you don't know what the circumstances are going to be the next time around, how you're going to set that whole thing up.
I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys free master classes between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship, taught by spiritual masters, yogis, spiritual thought leaders, and best-selling authors. Just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Today on the show, we have Joanna DiMaggio. She is an expert in past life regressions. And in this episode, we talk about past lives, our soul's journey, reincarnation, karma, and much more. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show, Joanne DiMaggio. How are you doing, Joanne?
I'm great. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm excited to talk to you about what your work and how you've gotten started on your spiritual journey, and how you got on your spiritual journey. So first question is, how did you begin this insane spiritual journey that you are on.
It is insane when you think about my background. Well, you know, I was born and raised Catholic, went to 12 years of Catholic school, but I had a lot of questions that weren't answered at all. You know, things just didn't make any sense to me. So when I was a teenager, I started reading books about Edgar Cayce, and I read books that were written by Ruth Montgomery and Jeff Stern. And then I read the book, The Search for Bridie Murphy. That was the first reincarnation related book. And I thought, you know what, this makes perfect sense. It answered all my questions. So I had it in the back of my mind, you know, for the longest time, but didn't really do anything about it until 1987, when Shirley MacLaine's Out on a Limb became a miniseries. It was aired on ABC. Long before your time, Alex.
I'm a little older than you might think.
That was like my big wake up call. I think it was the big wake up call of thousands of us sleeping metaphysicians. Mm-hmm. And so that year I thought, you know, I remembered then that as a teenager, this intrigued me. And the part about the reincarnation part of that show really got me. I mean, really had me hooked. And so I joined the Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment, the ARE, that year. And I also formed my own past life organization that I called Plexus. So suddenly I was, you know, meeting people on the leading edge of this work, past life therapists and authors and people like that. And not only through the ARE, but then I was inviting them to come and speak to our group, Plexus. So I have been doing it ever since. Then I went and got my hypnotherapy certification. And later on, I got my master's in transpersonal studies through Atlantic University. So I have been doing past life work and research. The research is the fascinating part for me. I've been doing it since the 1990s, so over 30 years.
Oh, wow. Now, you mentioned Edgar Cayce. Can you explain to people who Edgar Cayce was? Many people don't know who he is.
Yeah, sure. Edgar Cayce was probably the most renowned psychic of the 20th century. He lived in Virginia Beach, Virginia. He gave readings for people. He would go into a trance and then he would give a reading. Most of the reading, of the 14,000 readings he gave, 12,000 of those were health readings. And his health readings, he would give remedies. People would go to him because they had exhausted every other, you know, option in terms of traditional medicine. And those health readings were everything from A to Z. And a lot of them were so far ahead of their time. They're still being utilized. Some of the original remedies are being reproduced now. That's why he earned the title Father of Holistic Medicine. And then he started doing life readings, which were more esoteric in nature. So in other words, he started talking to people about their past lives. He started answering really profound type questions that people were asking about how the universe operated. And I mean, it was just, you know, talked about everything, dreams, just an unlimited number of topics. And those are the readings that I'm most interested in, especially the readings on reincarnation. So I've been a student of Cayce's, you know, since 1987, and he's very much a part of my foundation of my spiritual journey, and I bring his work into my own.
Did he mention anything in all of those readings? Because I'm assuming you've studied many of those readings, especially the esoteric ones you were talking about. Did he mention any predictions on what was going to happen to where we're at right now, what's going on, the shift that's happening in humanity currently?
He did. I don't remember them well enough to recite them to you. Mm-hmm. There are people at ARE that have spoken on this very topic about, I talked about China and Russia, and I forgot, they call them the world readings or something to that effect. But because my interest was focused solely on the reincarnation aspect of it, I didn't really absorb a lot of those kinds of readings that he gave.
Got it. All right. So can you explain to people who might not know the concept of reincarnation and what that actually is? I think most people understand or have heard the term. It's been in the zeitgeist now for probably over 100 years and has been in the Eastern zeitgeist for thousands of years. So can you explain to people what it is and why we do it?
Yeah, I mean, from the KC readings, you know, he talked about creation, how we were all created at the same, all the souls were created at the same time, which is why I love to say there's no such thing as an old soul. It's just that when you see somebody or you hear that reference of so-and-so is an old soul, basically just what it means is that they have come to the earth more times than others and have gained more knowledge. So think of us as spiritual beings inhabiting a physical body. We decided that we wanted to experience everything that the earth plane would provide for us, all the lessons we could learn here that we couldn't learn anywhere else. With the, you know, the goal, of course, is to go back to where we came from, to go back to the point where we don't need to incarnate again. And so each lifetime that we live, we encounter certain issues that we may want to work that end up that we work on in a subsequent lifetime. So in other words, you know, you could work on have a lifetime that happened 1,000 years ago, and you're just working on some of those issues now. It could be something to do with a chronic illness. It could be something to do with an attitude that you had. It could be, you know, that you were dealing with greed, or lack of responsibility, or abandonment issues, or issues of acceptance, or, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So if you think of the earth as a school, and we're the little souls with our backpacks on coming to the earth plane to learn, we have a curriculum that we come in and we learn what we need to learn, and then we go back in that between life state, and then we plan for the next lifetime to deal with some of the issues from the previous one. It's all learning experience. It's all based on karma. Karma is, you know, you reap what you sow. It's cause and effect. And we just continue to build on that. And we come back with the same group of souls over and over again. They're part of our soul family. We travel together like a pod, a soul pod. We change gender, we change roles, but the same souls that are in your life right now have been in your life from the beginning of time. They just, you know, like your mother in this life could have been your husband in a previous life. We just change our roles to enable us to assist the soul that we came in with whatever lesson. So in other words, if you say, I'm coming in, maybe in one life you abandoned somebody. And that was a ripple effect and it caused a lot of damage. So you say to yourself, well, okay, I'm going to experience what it feels like to be abandoned. So you plan a lifetime in which that's going to pop up at some point. Well, the people that are coming in with you, the souls that are coming in with you, know that that's what you're working on. And so they say, you know, at some point in your life, I'm going to abandon you. So now you could look at it as, oh, they're challenging me. They're being, you know, unnecessarily cruel to me or unfair to me, but they also love you and they're supporting you and helping you learn the lesson. So it's just a matter of like going to school, you know, you take your classes, you graduate, and then you don't have to take the class over again.
So we're constantly learning, coming back to learn again and again. We choose the parents, we choose the family, we choose the circumstances to teach us the lessons that we have. And that's, I know a lot of people listening might have issue with that when they're going through really rough times right now in certain things, like being abandoned or having an alcoholic parent that abuses them. Or you come in another, on the other side of the spectrum, you come in with a loving family and someone who's very supportive of you in your dreams, and you experience that kind of support where a friend of yours in school, literally here in school, might have not that, doesn't have two parents, doesn't have a supportive family, that has an alcoholic dad or mom or something along those lines. But these are – It doesn't, you know, and very much like yourself, I mean, I was raised Catholic as well. I still feel guilty about it, by the way. And, and no, just jokes, everyone's just jokes. But I came in Catholic as well, and I had tons of questions that just things didn't line up for me. It just some things didn't line up. So when I started to study Eastern philosophy, Eastern religions, certain things started to click more, and then Edgar Cayce's work came into my life as well. Paramahansa Yogananda's work came into my life, and there's so many other things started to click in and out, and it started to make more sense to me, because it made, on a logical sense, just pure logic, if this is my only life and I get to experience it as a male in the United States of America during this time period, that seems pretty narrow.
Right.
It just didn't make sense. So you mean I just won the lottery, essentially, as opposed to someone who was born in Africa who's starving right now, and this is their only experience, or they're born for a year and all they do is suffer through disease and pain and then they die? Is that it for them? Those things just didn't make sense to me in a world that is so guided by some sort of force. Nature is guided by some sort of force, and that force, I believe, guides us as well. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You earned this life that you have living in the United States right now. I mean, Cayce said that's what we did, that we earned this. That isn't to say in a previous life you didn't live in Africa, or you didn't live in Asia, or you lived in Europe, or you know, you lived up north, or in Alaska, or the Antarctic, or in Russia, or wherever. We've experienced all nationalities. We've experienced all religions. We have experienced all races and ethnicities. And if you really truly embrace that idea that you've been all things, you've been all people, then you realize that we're all one. That there is no difference between us. I happen to be in a female Caucasian body in this lifetime. I wasn't in my last lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I then point a finger at someone and say I hate them because of the way they look? When it was, you know, there before the grace of God go I was that person in another lifetime. And so we experience all different cultures to give us that really well-rounded understanding and view of souls being all connected, and that we're all the same. In the Creator's eyes, we are all the same. There's no difference between any of us.
Mm-hmm.
One isn't higher than the other, no matter what kind of lifetimes that they have led. You know, it's all karmic. You may have had a stellar lifetime. Edgar Cayce was a priest in Egypt, Rata, you know, and then he was a riverboat gambler. And Cayce always talked about in that life the soul gained, in that life the soul lost. It's all about the experience and the lessons learned. And also, sometimes when people come in, say that they have some sort of a physical or mental challenge in this life,
mm-hmm.
it isn't because they had bad karma. It could be that they were coming in service to these souls around them, because how are the souls around them responding to them? You know, it's a very logical, rational universe in which nothing is random. You know, it's all synchronistic, and it's fair, it's just. It explains, you know, why are some people wealthy and some people are poor? Why are some people healthy and other people aren't? Why some people have beautiful, healthy, loving lifetimes and other people are suffering? You know, everybody's working out karma in their own way. And a lot of times people that have a really idealistic life here on the earth, where they have no problems whatsoever. They have beautiful families who love them. You know, they've got enough money. They're healthy and all. They earn that. It could be that it's sandwiched in between two very challenging, difficult lifetimes. So, you know, you go back to spirit and you want to take a vacation? Go to Earth and enjoy the earth. It's a beautiful place. you know, and then the next lifetime after that, then we're going to deal with these other issues.
I've heard of the soul vacation. I've heard other guests of mine talk about the soul vacation where they, you know, souls are just like, sometimes they just want to chill. And yeah. Just like, it's like going to Hawaii.
Yeah.
for a lifetime. I mean, and I argue that many people who live on Hawaii, this is their soul vacation, to say the least.
Yeah.
Now, the, you know, we're working things out karmically. We're learning our lessons here and there. The concept of the ascended master, the Jesuses, the Buddhas, the Yoganandas, the Babajis, the Mohammeds, all of these ascended masters who get to a certain place where they're like, I've learned all the lessons I need to learn now. I'm now free to go to the next level. Is that an accurate description of what an ascended master is?
Well, pretty much. Many of the ascended masters haven't been incarnated before. And so there are some on the other side that don't come to the earth. They're just, there are teachers, you know, and they're at that other level, like the Council of Elders that I talk about in my book,
mm-hmm.
going before them. They're like guidance counselors at school, you know? So you go before them, they have your report cards out, which is all of your previous lifetimes, and they help you to figure out what you need to do in the next life. But yeah, there are certainly people at that, you know, certainly energies or souls, I wouldn't even call them souls, energies at that level. And they've earned that as well. So some of them have been on the earth. And I've done some regressions on a handful of people who fit that category, that they are advanced teachers. Mm-hmm. And also don't forget, it's not just here on the earth. Some of these folks are experiencing life on a different reality than we are, and they're accumulating wisdom based on that and then bringing it in for us.
Right. Many of the ascended masters, you know, who decide to either come back and reincarnate back to teach, they do so. So many yogis over the years, over the centuries have come back to teach. But from what I understand, nobody incarnates unless they have something to learn in a lifetime. Every single ascended master, you know, even Jesus was born and then there was a 30-year gap. He was figuring some stuff out. then he's like, I'm ready. And then then he walks into town. I am now the Son of God. Everyone follow me. But there was a 30-year. I always found that so interesting. Like, this 30-year gap, that seems like we should probably ask questions about what he was doing during that time. But of course, no one ever does.
No one knows, right? I mean, you know, well, they do. You do come to Earth to learn, but you also sometimes, you know, come to be an example or a teacher or a role model. So then you come in service,
right,
to other people. You know, you don't have to come in, but you say, hey, they need my help. I'm going to go down there and see what the heck I can do for them. Mm-hmm. And then you come in and you show up like that. That's a beautiful thing when that happens.
And many of us, I think all of us, chose to incarnate during this time period because of this great shift that's happening in the world. We, you know, I've heard from other teachers as well that everyone who's incarnating during this time, this crazy time that we're in, is here on purpose. There are lessons to be taught and learned in this period of human history and where we're going. And like so many people say, chaos is the fertile ground of change. And we're definitely in that world.
Just hang in there, people.
Hang in. It's going to be a rough, ride, but
it is a rough ride already. Yeah.
It's going to be a rough ride, but I think we'll be better for it at the end, out the other side of this. But that's life. Life in general, the worst things that happen to us are the things that make us the strongest, teach us the deepest lessons. They're unpleasant, but in many ways needed sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that there are certain people here that are reminding us to just kind of hold on and to remember what's true and to remember what's important and have that ability to connect with spirit. so that you maintain that balance, you know, because it's very easy to get to the point to be so despondent over what's happening around you that you just want to give up. And you're wondering, what the heck am I doing here? I don't want to be here, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you get, you know, this mass exodus of souls. But I do think that, and from whatever thing that I remember of Casey saying that, you know, it's worth it in the end. It's going to be worth it in the end.
Now, you've talked about a soul's mission and how we plan our curriculum, if you will, while we're down here. Is there a moment when a soul does not fulfill their soul's mission? And why is that, if that is the case? Why have they skewed off their path?
You know, that's really an interesting question, Alex. I'll tell you, my last book was called Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. Mm-hmm. And it's all about this little boy that Edgar Casey did a reading on when he was 2 days old. And said that his soul was the soul of Thomas Jefferson and Alexander the Great. So he had two famous past lives. Casey said that this soul could do for the world what Jefferson did for this country. Imagine having that kind of a responsibility put on your little shoulders, right, when you're 2 days old. He never, of course, did that. My book is about why. It's really about free will. You can, you know, you have your marching paper, so to speak, right? Casey teaches us how to define our soul's mission. We come up with an ideal, you know, this is why I'm here. This is what my soul's mission is. This is what I want to accomplish. But at any given point in time, you can change your mind and you can go, first of all, a lot of people don't know what their mission is.
Most.
Even my own children, you know, they're both adults and I'll say to them, well, what do you feel passionate about? What is it that you would do if you didn't have any, if money weren't an issue? And they can't answer me because they don't have an answer to that. I think a lot of people are like that. That's one of the first questions people ask when, in my intake conversation, when we're going to do a past life regression, you know, I'll say, why did you want to do a regression? I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And they're lost like that. But that information is there. But even if you get it the way this little T.J. Davis got it, who was the Thomas Jefferson Reborn, things can happen. Like in his case, his parents didn't follow the recommendations that Casey was giving for how to raise this little boy. And they were alcoholics and gamblers, and they had their own issues they were dealing with. And then later on, when TJ became an adult, you know, he could have changed. He could have pursued the course that Casey set for him. He chose not to. So when that happens, you know, you go, your path goes in a whole different direction. Is it wrong? No, I don't think there's any mistakes. I think that there's a lesson in that for you. You know, you chose to do that. Eventually, you know, in a succeeding lifetime, you're going to end up probably addressing that whole issue again, which is why I always say, if you know why you're here, do it now, because you don't know what the circumstances are going to be the next time around, how you're going to set that whole thing up. But I think free will is the biggest, it's the biggest gift we were given and the biggest obstacle that we have as well, because it could really create havoc in your life. But everything has a purpose, and I don't see anything as ever being bad in the end.
So with that example, that person who decided not to go down that path that Casey, you know, predicted for him, or at least even try to help guide him down that path, that person was never incarnated. That kind of person was never incarnated to do what, you know, in other words, that there was a job opening and he decided not to take the job. He's like, you know what? I just really rather not. Was there another soul that was supposed to take their place in this lifetime?
No, I think what happened was, I think there was people misinterpreted the Casey reading. I really do think when Casey said this all could do for the world what Jefferson did for this country, I think he was really referring to the Casey teachings of him sharing that. Because TJ has always said to me, you know, Joanne, all of humanity's questions can find answers in the Casey readings if only they would read them and if only they would study them. And I think the fact that he was raised in the Casey household, that Casey tutored him personally, you know, they used to go out on the pier behind the Casey house. There was a lake there and they used to go fishing. There's pictures of them fishing together. It's so adorable, Mr. Casey with this little 2-3-year-old boy. And Casey used that pier as his classroom. That's where he was teaching little TJ about, and TJ, by the way, stood for Thomas Jefferson, and his last name was Davis. That's where he was teaching him about reincarnation, about grace, about karma, about how to read auras, and the creation story and things like that. They didn't talk about Thomas Jefferson or world affairs or anything like that. Although TJ had some flashes of memory of being Jefferson, he never really talked about it. He never really focused in on it to the extent that you would think he would, having been somebody that famous. Plus, he lives right here in Charlottesville, where Jefferson lived. He's still alive, by the way. I think that job is just going to be put on hold until he decides to come back. So
my question is that he will have to at one point or another walk this path.
Well, that's the path that Casey said he was capable of walking. He didn't necessarily say that you absolutely have to walk this path.
It's so interesting because there's so many, there's so many people that I'm sure you know and as well as I do, who you can see the potential in them to be able to do things that they can't see. And that happens, I think all of us have had that experience at one point or other, that you meet somebody and you look at them and go, well, they're special. They really should be doing something. It's kind of like meeting Michael Jordan after he got cut from his high school basketball team. And he could have at that moment said, you know what, this is not for me. And we would have lost one of the greatest basketball players of all time. But he decided to walk down because he had the skills. So he had the talent. He had the ability to do great things in that arena. Yeah. So I see that a lot in people. Even when I speak to people sometimes, because for some reason people come and ask me questions about their lives sometimes, friends of mine, people like that. And I'll always ask them, I'll always look at them and just inherently know, yeah, I think this is the path you should be walking. And why are you so afraid? Which brings me to my next question. Why are we afraid? So afraid of going down the paths that many of us inherently know that is correct. Like I've walked down the path of the artist for 25 years in the filmmaking space. Not an easy path.
No.
The artist path is never easy, but it is. And I know so many other people who I've had actual clients of mine who were retired doctors and lawyers who said, I'm retired now, but what I really want to do is make a film. Yeah. And they've spent a lifetime doing something they were okay. They were like, okay, I'll deal with this, but they weren't happy. And they're like, oh, what I really want to do is write a book, or I really want to paint, or I really want to make a film. Why are we so afraid of just walking down that path?
You know, it's so interesting that you bring that up because I see that a lot in people that are healers. Mm. When they come to me for a regression, they'll say, you know what? I really feel deep inside that I should be doing some healing work, but I just can't bring myself to do it. I don't want to deal with it. So what happens? We go back to, I always take people back to the lifetime that's affecting them the most now, because we've had hundreds of lifetimes and you're not working on all of them at the same time. You've chosen one. When you came into this life, you said, you know, I didn't finish this. I have some unfinished business from this life back in 1826. I'm going to work on it now. Well, every single case of these people that want to be healers or think they were healers is because they actually were healers in a previous lifetime, but something happened. They were persecuted, they were killed, tortured, whatever. Because when they go back to their previous lifetime, they'll say, well, I'm out in the woods and I'm picking up herbs and things for healing, but I'm looking over my shoulder because I'm afraid somebody's going to see me. So a lot of times the fear is based on something that happened to you in a previous life regarding that very career aspiration. And you're afraid to try it again because you remember, oh, I suffered because I did it back then. I've been a writer for almost all of my lifetimes. And I like to think of myself as a reporter for the universe. That's how I identify myself, you know. But that's a difficult road to go on as well. I mean, when they talk about starving artists, yes. But I always felt compelled to do that, and I still do. But you're right, there are so many people who, and one of the things about a past life regression, especially when we go to the life between life part of it, is that we make a list of their karmic issues and we make a list of their karmic attributes. It's the attributes, because not all lifetime, when you think about karma, it's not always bad. Sometimes you gain a skill, a talent, or an ability in a previous lifetime, and that's yours for all time. That never goes away. It goes into your positive karmic bank account, and you can call on, you can pull that in at any given time. But sometimes you need a little help to remember that, okay? So I think if people have a yearning, we were given memory triggers at the before we came into existence in this life, and those memory triggers include hints about a previous lifetime. You know, for me, when I was growing up, I was absolutely obsessed with the 18th century. I mean, I would write with a feather pen on parchment paper. I'd dip in the ink, you know, and go like, and I had candles. I listened to Baroque music. I grew up in a blue-collar south side of Chicago neighborhood. This was unheard of, right? But those are the kinds of, it turns out that I did have an 18th century past life, but those are the kinds of hints that spirit provides for us all through our lives to try to wake us up and remember the path that we decided to, we wanted to go on in this life. So sometimes it helps to have it always helps to have the regression, because you get all these aha moments. Oh, now I get it. Now I understand. Now I see. And then you put two and two together. Other times people can go through their entire lives and never know why they're here. They don't even think about it. They never ask the question. You know, a lot of my mainstream friends never would ask that question. You know, they just go through, you know, and they just figure, well, I'll die and that's the end of it. You know, I don't think my parents ever thought in terms of why they were here. They were here to have me, for me to pass through them.
Right. No, it's interesting too, because I've been obsessed with, you know, ancient Egypt and the Mayan culture and the Eastern cultures. It's something that I've been fairly obsessed with since I was young, probably in my teens and into my college years. And I always found that fascinating. I love archaeology. I love, you know, anytime we go travel, I'm like, I gotta go travel to some old, my wife calls it the old rocks. You just want to look at old rocks, don't you? That's all you want to do is look at old rocks. Okay, we get one day of old rocks, but then we got to go to the beach. So yeah.
Exactly.
And then you go to Tulum, where you get the rocks and the beach on the same day. But it's very interesting. One thing I like to ask, is it ever too late to change or follow your soul's mission in life?
No.
Can you figure it out in your 60s and 70s and go, you know what? I'm ready to jump on the path.
You know, that's when a lot of people do figure it out. You know, I mean, when you look at the demographics of people that, you know, are doing a lot of this really deep soul searching work, a lot of them are all like, you know, just look at the statistics in my research project when I'm doing them. You know, the average age is in the early 60s. And they're doing this. And also a lot of people, they have raised their families. They have completed their careers and they're retired. They've got this time on their hands. And as they sit back and they go, you know, like you said earlier, I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to be a photographer. I've always wanted, you know, to be an artist, or I've always wanted to learn to play the piano, or whatever. And so consequently, you know, sometimes later in years, that's when they do it. People that are smart enough to do it earlier, they get a head start on the rest of us. And so that's why I'm always so excited when younger people come in and they're on a spiritual quest, and they want to know, you know, why am I here? What's my purpose? What role am I playing? You know, and I just think, I mean, I started on this quest when I was quite young, but most people, in my experience, wait until quite a bit later before they even start to pursue this.
But I think now the generations that are coming up behind us, there's so much more information out there. We're all so much more interconnected. I mean, the wealth of human knowledge is in our pockets and can be searched at any moment. So, you know, raising children myself, I see their perspective is so different than mine was, than yours was. They are asking these questions because the information that is out there, the concept of meditation, the concept of yoga, the concept of reincarnation, the concepts of souls, these things are just in the ether. Where when I was growing up, I don't even know when the first time I heard about meditation was. Probably in college. In the 90s when I went to college. So it's kind of where I think I first, and then that kind of starts, it's like a little bit of a seed, and then you start going down, and I'm a very curious person generally. So I started to go down and start studying Eastern philosophy and then Western philosophy. And then you start making thoughts. You start thinking about Socrates and you start thinking about ancient yogis. And then you start looking at Jesus's life and you start figuring things out. But I feel that the generation coming up behind us is much more in tune with this.
Yeah, and they have every generation has a special role, a job. And I just had my third grandchild born May 2nd.
And oh, congrats.
Things, when I look at her and my other two grandchildren who are 3 and 5, I say to them, when my granddaughter, I looked at her and I said, I know you have a really, really special job ahead. You know, there's something that you and your peers are here to work on, you know, and it's a big job that they have. And I would say, you know, to her, you know, I will be here and support you as long as I can. But I see that in them. I see that light. I see that curiosity that, and like I said, I think each of them has their own aura. They're as a generation, you know, they kind of come in. I'm working on a book right now, Alex, on the Beatles and spirituality.
Oh, you're talking dirty to me now.
Yeah, because I will reveal I was a Beatles fan club president when I was a teenager, and I kept all my newsletters from all those years. I was curious, did the Beatles plant the seed of spirituality in my generation that didn't blossom until 20, 30 years later? And now that I'm doing my research, I have like 50 Beatle biographies I went through. I came up with 16 pages, single-spaced typewritten pages of my notes, of comments about reincarnation from the Beatles that I knew. That growing up, that while I was in the midst of Beatlemania, that wasn't a part of our world, any of that. It wasn't until George got involved, you know, with Indian philosophies that was introduced to us. And because we were like little sponges, and anything that they said or did, we just absorbed it. Whether we agreed with it or not, whether we liked it or not. My question was, you know, did this create a seed that that eventually, like, why am I a past life researcher and therapist? It makes no sense when you think about my background growing up in an Italian-American Catholic family on the south side of Chicago in this blue-collar neighborhood. Makes no sense whatsoever. Nobody.
With your, and with your uncle, and with your uncle who played baseball.
Yes.
And your Aunt Marilyn.
My Aunt Marilyn. Don't tell anybody about my Aunt Marilyn. Yeah, so it's just it just amazes me. The more research I do about that part of my life, you know, being so young, and yet those seeds were planted, and some of us then took those seeds and we develop esoteric careers on something that subliminally was sort of implanted in us so many years ago.
Well, it's interesting because I'm a huge Beatles fan. I know many people, you know, some people love Beatles, some don't. But generally speaking, the Beatles are very beloved around the world. I wasn't born in that generation. I think the Beatles had been broken up by the time I was born. I was alive when John, unfortunately, was killed. I was young, but I remember it. I was living in New York when that happened, by the way. So I remember that. But there's something about their music that connects with multiple generations. Like my generation, my kids, even my young kids know who the Beatles are because of us. Listen, have heard music from them. And I mean, if you just look at the cover of Sgt. Pepper, I mean, there's Yogananda, there's Babaji. They snuck in so many.
Yeah.
Images in that, like they just completely subliminally snuck it in, which just cool, looks like a cool montage. But if you start looking at all those individuals, they meant something. Yeah. It's really, I can't wait for that book. That should be a fun book.
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you look at them from a more of an esoteric point of view or reincarnation point of view, they're the perfect example of a soul group.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of how they came together, the purpose they had of coming together, what their roles were. There's a book about the spiritual dimension of the Beatles, talks about the astrological things that were going on when they, during different parts of their partnership. But it's very fascinating. You could see how karma works, that's for sure. when you examine their lives. So, it's right in front of us. It's everywhere around us if we choose to look at it, objectively without fear. Spirit will never give you something to deal with that you can't handle. So a lot of people, like, I just did a regression this morning, and this person was really terrified, you know, of doing it. And then after I said, you're safe, don't worry. And afterwards, and he sort of laughed and said that it was just, he said, this wasn't like anything I thought it was going to be. You know, the truth is out there. And I'm a big advocate of people finding it out for themselves, of not really putting their faith in somebody telling them, like, you know, you want a roadmap of your life. You want somebody to hand that to you. No, you've got to do the work. That's why we're here. We're here to do the work ourselves, not to be spoon-fed or hand. So there's so many resources available to people, like you said today, that there's if your curiosity is on, you know, full time, go for it, because I think you'll be very it's like an insatiable thirst once you start to drink from that well, mm-hmm. of wisdom. You just can't get enough.
I mean, can you imagine having access to conversations like this 30 years ago, 40 years ago, like at an instant around the world, wherever you are in the world? If you have an internet connection, you could have access to these kinds of conversations, where something like this would be room somewhere, where a bunch of people, ballroom somewhere, where they've paid a couple bucks to get in to see this kind of conversation. It was limited to 50 or 100 people, yeah. And that was it. But now it's literally millions or tens of millions are this information is available to. So I think that is also by design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is an awakening happening.
I agree.
Without question. And even in my lifetime, I've seen it change from when my mom was meditating in the 70s, and my grandmother looked at her like, is she okay? What's wrong with her? Is she...
You're having a meatball.
Should we be worried about the children? From that point to now, it's an app, and CEOs that talk about, like, I need to meditate every day in order to function properly.
Yeah.
So there's a big shift that's happened in the last 50 years, without question.
Right.
Now, you've spoken about a concept called soul writing. What is soul writing?
Soul writing is a written form of meditation. So if you think of prayer as you talking to God, meditation is God talking to you, soul writing is you taking notes. So it's writing in an altered state of consciousness. So it's going into whatever your regular meditative practice is, going into meditative state. As long as you say prayer of protection, surround yourself with white light, don't work with spirit without doing that. I don't care how long you've been at this, just don't do that. So I always just take some deep breaths, just relax, go into your meditation, surround yourself with white light, put the pen loosely in your hand on paper, and then you can ask the universe any question you want, and you'll get an answer. It's like a 24/7 hotline to spirit. So you can use it in all, it applies to so many ways in your life. You can use it for psychoanalysis and healing. You can use it to understand esoteric philosophies. I asked the question once, what's the difference between the Ten Commandments and universal laws? And the answer I got from spirit, it was, well, I had a 2-week course when they're telling me all the difference, but the basic thing was there is no universal law that begins thou shalt not. Those are that level of writing is something that anybody can do. It's not just a few. And that was my thesis, by the way, for my master's degree. And then it became my first book, Soul Writing. And I'm actually going to be teaching it. We're going to take a 3-day I'm turning it into a 3-day certification course through the ARE in July. So if anybody's interested in that, they can just go on the edgarcasey.org website and find it. But you can use it for, like I said, you could especially use it in past life work. I sometimes attach a soul writing session right after the regression, because then the soul writing will go deeper. You know, you can ask spirit, what the heck is this information all about? What am I supposed to do with this? How do I apply this to my life? You know, so you can use it with various art forms. Great composers and artists, used writers. I have a whole list in my book of everybody that it's the same process. So it's the process of tapping into that universal inspiration. Only in this case, it's in the written word.
No, you say spirit. What exactly is spirit? Is that a spirit guide? Is that your higher self? Is that God? What is that?
It could be whatever you believe it to be, whatever is comfortable for you to believe. You know, when I think of spirit, I'm just thinking of a much higher entity, a divinity.
Got it.
I interchange that word with source. I feel like, you know, we all have a connection to God, to our creator. And we have emissaries. So, you know, when growing up Catholic, what were we taught about guardian angels, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was so comforting to me. That was about the only thing I got that I was able to take with me. It was the idea that I had a guardian angel was assigned to me, and she was there 24/7 taking good care of me. Right. So it's that kind of a partnership. It's like you're a little soul with a backpack on coming to Earth, and they slip this little 24/7 phone home card in your backpack, and then you're told, listen, you might get into some trouble down there on the Earth. You may run out of people to talk to. You may be very disappointed or very despondent, or you know, you've talked to your minister, your priest, your marriage counselor, your friends, and you haven't gotten the answer you want. We're here 24/7. Kind of check in with us.
The price is right.
That's right. It's free. Yeah.
It's free.
Yeah.
Now, you've also discussed in some other interviews about your higher self or connecting to your higher self. Can you explain to people what the higher self is and how can you connect with that, that soul? And I'm assuming the higher self is the soul, your soul.
Your soul, the part of you that is really contains your ideal, you know, contains the, your ideal is the highest aspiration that you have, and everything you do, you work toward that ideal. So for me, when I went to define my ideal, it was to inspire and empower through the written word. That's my mission. That's my soul's mission. So my higher self is almost like the keeper of the gate, the gatekeeper, that keeps that always in the forefront. And, you know, when I need help and staying on track, or I feel like, you know, everything's going wrong and I need some advice or whatever, that's where I go. I go to that overarching, almost like oversoul, that is that sort of, you know, my personal keeper of the tabs of my life, and going there for advice or explanation or guidance or whatever.
Do you believe that we I mean, obviously we talked about the soul's mission and what we're here to do. Many of us sometimes go off path for whatever reason. So I always use the examples, like if today I have the free choice, I'm like, I'm going to learn how to be an astronaut. Now that's probably not going to work out well for me. Or I'm going to be an NBA star. Probably not going to work out for me real well. And you go down that road and you start getting obstacle upon obstacle upon obstacle upon obstacle upon door closed, door closed, door closed, door closed. Then when you go back on the path where you're supposed to, a lot of times the obstacles start to clear, the doors start to open. My question to you is, how do you know when the obstacle in front of you is something that you need to overcome to continue on the right path, or is the universe trying to tell you, you are completely off the wrong path, and you're on the wrong path?
That's a good question, Alice. It could be both. It could be a little of both. I was just thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about all the jobs that I had.
Right.
From the time I was a teenager and how miserable I was in every single one of them until I worked for myself, or I developed a freelance career, freelance writing career that now, you know, I'm doing the regressions and writing books and doing conferences and things like that. Now is when I'm at my happiest. And why? Because I really wasn't meant to work for somebody else, because that always was a distraction from what my real work was. And I remember right before COVID started, I was always number one to volunteer for different committees. And, you know, I was involved with Unity Church for a long time, and I started a healing center there, and I was doing all that, working with ARE, volunteering, all volunteer, nothing brought in any money. And my daughter said to me, she's, Mom, what if you gave up everything and just focused on your writing? She says, isn't that why you're here, Mom? You know, because she would throw it back in my face. And I said, oh, I can't. What do you mean? I worked so hard to do all this other stuff to get where I am. Well, then COVID hits, right? And then I realized I don't need all these volunteer things. I really want to just focus on the writing and the work that I'm doing. My whole life changed at that point. And thanks to technology, you know, I didn't have to have an office in the healing center to see clients to do regressions. Now I'm doing regressions with people all over the world because I do them on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so looking at that, you know, all those jobs that I had, I was miserable. One obstacle after the other, after the other, after the other. And it was just like I grew up in Chicago, moving from the Chicago suburbs to Charlottesville, Virginia was unheard of. My family was like, what the heck are you doing? You have no reason to move there. What do you do? I felt compelled to come here. And, you know, everything went smoothly. Like the house sold, we found another house here. Everything just was flowing. And that's how you also tell that you're on the right course. One door after the other opens like that. So if the door closes and you're meeting all these obstacles, you know, I guess you really need to do some soul searching to find out, you know, what's the real reason behind that. Is because I don't think the spirit would stop you from making a mistake. If you choose to, you know, to choose a path that differs from the one that maybe you had set out in your pre-life planning session, I think they're going to let you go ahead and stumble, because you're going to learn something from that, right? No matter what you do, you'll still learn something. But if you're sensitive enough and you're working with spirit, you're flowing with spirit, you could feel when something is right and something isn't right. You know, you don't need to have a light shined on it. You could actually sense, well, this isn't working out. Maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe this is not right. Let me try something else. Until you find the very thing that brings you joy and fulfills your passion. I think that's the key to it.
Yeah, and so many times we could be more intuitive with ourselves, but our minds get in the way. Our brains get in the way of that. We try to intellectualize certain things. Yeah. Whereas if you feel, just really connect with, that's why meditation is so an important part of my life, because you're able to you quiet the mind, and that's when you truly can connect and you can feel. Now, Joanne, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, ask all of my guests. What is your mission in this life?
As I mentioned to you earlier, I had defined it as to empower and inspire through the written word.
And what is the ultimate purpose of life?
Of life in general? To learn as many lessons as we possibly can and to graduate and move on.
And where can people find out more about you, your new book, and many other things?
I'd love for them to visit my website, which is joannedimaggio.com. It's joannedimaggio.com. You can read about the different types of services I have, the different regressions that I do. You can book one online if you're so interested in doing so. And I've got a blog and a lot of other fun little questionnaire to find out what's the right type of regression for you. And all my books are online. And so I'd love for people to visit.
Joanne, it has been a pleasure talking to you today. It was so much fun having this conversation. So thank you again for the work you're doing and for everything you're doing for this world. So I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Same here.
So there you go. What do you think about reincarnation? Do you believe in it? You think we're all reincarnated or just some of us? It's a fascinating subject, I think. Phone lines are open. The number is 229-299-5320. That's 229-299-5320. Or a mad painter on Skype. Been a long week here. Come on, get calling. Well, here comes Mona. What do you think of reincarnation? Or were you listening to...
I'm a Studio A on Sunday. No. I don't go anywhere but Studio A. I know it should be a... What?
She does a good show.
I'm glad. She does a YouTube with it too, doesn't she? So if anybody wants, I think she does YouTube too. Puts it all on YouTube. So
she has a YouTube channel.
But sometimes I'm just, there's only certain people I can handle to listen to and to do whichever, and I just...
So what do you know about reincarnation?
I know it's a fact, just like karma. It's just that we have not been allowed to know because it would put too much power in our hands to fight the stuff that we've been having to face to make it where we're at today, all sheeple.
Well, according to her listening to her, is you're paying off karma that you created lifetimes ago. That doesn't make no sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me either. But then there depends on what kind of contract you create with your other essences that are around you helping you.
Well, but you're not allowed to see the contract. Let's see.
Well, but if you're open and you have your oversoul with you and you're a little past more than your ego, then you'll get that information. I mean, you know, I didn't hear the whole thing. I had to go feed a goose.
Yeah.
But, no, see, karma's like cause and effect, action, reaction. It can be so immediate that you don't even recognize it. And basically...
Yeah, well, then why would you have to wait several lifetimes in order to fulfill it? See, it doesn't make no sense.
I think we get to choose in between each time. Now, see, I didn't follow Edgar Cayce as much as she did. I was more with Jane Roberts, Seth Speaks, back in my teenagerhood.
Well, most of Cayce's were medical readings. They weren't futuristic readings of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I like Notre Dame. You
know? Yeah, it wasn't a Notre Dame style.
No, I was more into the metaphysics. But I'll tell you something that there is. I never saw anything about astrology when I was a child. But I had a rough childhood. But anyway, the first time my one friend handed me an astrology book, it was like the floodgates opened and all that information came into my consciousness. And so that was a tricky freak out, like, oh my gosh. And so ever since then, I've understood and utilized astrology.
How come that happened to you and not to somebody else? You know what I'm saying? Why are some people allowed to do that?
Well, because I was an astrologer and a, oh my gosh, what do you call those people that, Oracle, Delphi. So all that came back to me about what it was. Now, I've had conditions as a child that I would scare the shit out of people because I would tell them that this is going to happen, it would happen. And it wasn't anything but me just being me. It wasn't like I was looking for it or anything else like that. So I was very highly alienated as a child because they were scared.
Flippy in the chat room says it takes us several lifetimes because we're dumbasses.
We get to choose and make our own assessments through each time. So... you want to be a dumbass this time? Have fun. I guess I didn't believe that I needed to be an asshole this time. I'm not saying.
Well, I believe in reincarnation, but on the other hand, I've never been here.
Right.
You know, this
That's
isn't
probable.
The center of the universe.
Oh, no, I started here as the first mud puddle. So I know I'm part of this earth big time. Not to say I don't have star family or whatever, but You know, I sure wasn't, I don't know why I picked the family I picked to get born into, but there must have been good reasons to help turn me on, you know, turn on different.
I think subjects. I was talked into it.
Oh, well, yeah. That happens.
He says, you can't do this.
Yeah, right. How dare you think you can do that? But yeah, so I think we've just been taught so much to fear ourselves that we just aren't looking to make and to see who we really are. Now, I've always investigated because
That's always been one of my biggest thing is people don't understand why they're here in particular. Everybody has a purpose, regardless of who they are or where they're from.
Even if they're just here to be here because they're part of the fabric that holds the rest of it together, doesn't even mean that they have to be, you know, special. You know, type people.
Typecast.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Some people are destined to be writers. Some people are destined to be artists. Other people are destined to clean toilets.
By the time I was 8 years old, I knew I was going to teach elementary school. I was going to be an artist. And I was going to design houses. So what did I do? I went and got my BA in art. I got a commercial art degree and an architecture degree. Now, have I done any of them? Yeah, a little bit here and there, because I did teach elementary school for a couple years. But when they started handing me what I was supposed to teach the children, besides what I felt how the children should be taught, I couldn't handle that. And then to get into the commercial art field, they wanted me to lie. I cannot lie. Oh my gosh, one of the biggest pains to me is lies. So I couldn't lie because that's all advertising is lying. And then to try to get into the architecture, hell, they just wanted men in there. They didn't want women in there. Go ahead.
I won a scholarship from Berkeley.
Ooh, cool.
But I turned it down.
Ooh. Why?
And I don't even have a high school diploma.
Really? Huh. Oh, I thought education was the most vital thing that we all needed. But then when you realize you learn more in life than you do by these... I don't even have a word for it. Institutions that just try to program you in the benefit of others. Go ahead.
Yeah, academia and intelligence doesn't walk hand in hand.
That's so true. That is such a fact. I'm telling you what. Especially this day and age. Oh, my gosh. I really feel for the children in that because... I mean, that's why
Clippy says Dolores Cannon advised us volunteers that we are here mainly to simply ground some new energy into the planet that is especially needed at this time. Why are we needed to do that?
Because we're more congenial of not taking sides. See, that's the thing that hurts so much is that when you choose sides, you lose the balance of the
Yeah, scale. Well, that's what it's about. That's my whole thing. I believe that's what we're actually here for, is to learn balance.
Well, it's by staying gray, staying on the rim of the coin, not left or right or heads or tails.
That old saying is a true saying that says the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
That's right.
You know, you need to know when to weigh the benefits and how to weigh the benefits in order to make an outcome that's positive in the long run and not negative.
Well, I really believe that it's just that you don't hold on to something so hard as a belief or a system that it gets in the way of the truth, because there's 360 degrees of perspective. There's not just one, two, or three. And so when you don't choose, the truth comes out. It has nowhere else to go but to come out. But if you make a choice and it can be the lie, then that's the thing that's going to perpetuate. Is that the right word? You know, is going to claim itself and grow and over and over again. That's why we're living such lies now. Does anybody realize that? Nobody looked any further to see that there might be other alternatives and perspectives to make the reality what it truly is. Or have it make itself, actually. Well, it does.
Oh, I think we live in a constructed reality that we all agree upon certain things.
Right.
You know, in order for it to work. If not, I mean, you got buildings and you got roads, you know, and if you didn't believe they were there, you know, you come to the end of the street and be gone. You have certain parameters that everybody agrees upon, but there's some loopholes in there that people can grab onto. And I guess you'd call them mistakes in the matrix.
Well, there's so many vibrational realms of dimensional situations that, you know, somebody like people who are colorblind, you can't have a conversation about colors if somebody else is blind to the colors. So it's real.
Well, he said that Doris Cannon said that karma is simply about balance.
Oh, didn't I say that? But anyway, I never really listened much to Dolores Cannon.
I think I had her on a show one time.
Well, that would have been cool.
I think I had her, but it was years ago. I've had so many people on.
Right. That's cool. Yeah, it's kind of hard to find people who want to come on these days. It's rather interesting. But hey, we do live in interesting times, for sure about that.
Well, it's always interesting times. Depends on your perspective.
There was something else that was said that kind of I had to think about and go, whoa, wait a minute here. And I forgot what it was, of course. Because it just wasn't that adamant for me to carry along with me.
I don't know where everybody is. Shoot.
Well, this happens every weekend.
I'll tell you what, it's starting to cool off here. So.
Oh, yeah.
More people spend time inside.
We're at 52 right now. It was in the 40s when I was out there earlier. But we lost our heater, so we have to basically wait for, hopefully, tomorrow for it to get fixed. And they were even claiming it might get snow. So,
what's messed up?
The heater. The house heater. The big heater. Yeah.
I tell you what, this house is sealed up pretty good, huh? We've been running the AC.
Oh.
And the electric hadn't even been but $130.
Oh, sure. That's cool.
It is compared to the trailer we were living in. It was $350.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Well, that's highway robbery. But there is probably no insulation in the trailer.
Yeah, it was just the trailer was old. They wouldn't fix nothing.
Well, I'm glad you got somewhere better. You deserve it. I mean, really.
Well, my son is because of my son.
Well, same difference. I thank him, but he ain't here. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you have family like that that love you that well.
He's been learning a little bit about what's going on because he keeps coming up and asking me, have you heard this? Have you heard that?
Oh, really? And you just smile, right?
Well, you know, he's waking up to what's going on, you know?
Nice. Yeah, I wish mine would do that.
I ain't just an old crazy conspiracy theorist so much anymore.
Anymore? Yay! Isn't that cool? Well, it is. That's good.
He don't introduce me as his crazy dad.
Oh. My son never wanted me to go talk to his teachers because I was always crazy way back when. God, it's hard to believe that my children are in their 40s. Ugh. Mid-40s. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he just turned 36. That's our youngest. My oldest is in his 40s.
Yep, you got a grandbaby. I got the great grandbaby, but mine won't talk to me.
We don't get to talk to ours too often. They're up near Washington and Maryland.
The worst part of mine lives right here in the state. But it's just one of those things that just... This prophecy shit's for the birds. I mean, you know, it's just like what they're saying. Oh, the Third World War, and this is all Christian. And I'm like going, y'all are talking it into happening. They don't realize.
Well, if prophecy is true, then no matter what you do, it makes no difference.
Right.
And I don't believe that.
What do you mean? You don't believe what? You just said it.
I don't believe that we don't. What I said was, if prophecy is true, no matter what we do, makes a difference. And I don't believe that. I believe everything we do makes a difference.
True that. Yep. That's an understatement there. A man. Yep. Yep.
I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I mean, if you put on a blue shirt in the morning instead of a red shirt, that's changed the outcome of a future.
Well, it depends on what kind of tie you need. If you wear a tie, yeah.
You know what I mean, though.
Yes, I do.
There's so many things that could change the outcome of the future.
And it might not.
What do they call it? The butterfly effect?
That's right.
The butterfly flaps his wings and... the Amazon, and it causes a tornado in the Midwest.
Right. Because it's all one fabric, right?
Yeah.
And that we just really don't know the cause and effect or outcome. But anytime I've had a prophecy, and I'll just call it a prevision. Like the time
I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. Right. I'm saying I don't believe it on a grand scale.
Well, but people who put out the effort to believe it create it.
Create, yes, they do.
Okay, let me tell you the story about the prophecies that I had. So I'm carrying this big old heavy magnet board because I used to do ceramics for a living and paint magnets. And I'm thinking, trying to get out the gate. The next thing I know is I saw in my third eye that the fell out of my hands and crush my foot. Well, the next thing I know, at that moment, everything was fine until it happened. So that was my problem. I was told that this is going to happen. So I guess I wouldn't have been in such a big surprise as it happened. But we're talking less than minutes away from each other, you know, and I'm like, okay. So to me, that was a prophecy. Okay, what was the other one? The house that
more a premonition, wasn't it?
Right, but to me, it was, it happened. I was told it could happen. Well, guess what? It happened. So, that would have been.
Well,
like,
that's one of them things that if people would get up in the morning and go, oh, it's going to be a bad day. Well, it's a bad day because that's what you started out thinking.
That's what you want, you know? Right? Yeah,
you
know, like.
But yeah, you're manifesting what you want.
Yeah, well.
The universe is going to give you stuff, but if you don't know how to ask for it, you know.
Well, you call it to you, yeah. People don't
realize. You end up calling it to you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody does it. I mean, it happens to every. I don't care who you are. You know, it happens to everybody.
Yeah, it's part of the law, universal law. God made laws.
You ever see that show, The Secret?
Yeah, I laughed. I laughed at so much of it because I already knew it. It was so stupid and childish. It was like, my gosh. Okay. Well, I grew up knowing this chick. So it was. But good for others who needed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Good for others who needed it. Because nobody.
I grew up with a bunch of hippies around, but my parents weren't.
Okay. What does that mean?
What? I just grew up with a lot of them around me, you know?
But you know I am the feral hippie.
Well, yeah.
But I
mean, I'd hang out with them and that, you know. And learned all kinds of weird stuff young.
Really? Tripping off mushrooms, shit like that?
Huh?
You said tripping off mushrooms, shit like that?
Oh, yeah. I was doing drugs young. I think 7 was when I first started smoking dope.
Yeah, I was in junior high. Tripping.
I think by 10 I was already doing acid.
Yep. Used to lay down and watch the palm fronds talk and dance across the sky.
I like acid now. It's a mind expanding drug. You got drugs out there that are mind expanding and you got drugs that are soul dampening.
Right. No, thank you.
Right. You need to know the difference in which ones to use and how to use them.
Right.
You should never go into something half-assed, you know.
Yeah, I do know. But then again, I wasn't taught. I had to learn by experience.
Right.
Because otherwise.
Well, that's one thing I did do. I did, you know, examine the situation before I indulged.
I think that's our Taurushood of ourselves, because we don't want to be unsettled. You know,
but I don't want to be controlled. I don't want to be controlled by a substance. That,
right.
It's bad enough cigarettes have got me.
Oh.
You know?
Well, I did know, but I've been clean 3 years as I sit here smoking my bowl.
Yeah, I'm outside smoking a cigarette right now. So.
But yeah, I couldn't.
With this headset, I can come outside. It still stays connected.
And the one thing was, is when I said, I no matter what it is, sugar, whatever, when I say no more, my body says, okay, no more. And I don't Jones.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool.
Cigarettes is the only thing I can't. I haven't been able to just drop.
Well, whenever I was out of pot, I needed a cigarette. But that was years ago.
See, I don't hardly smoke that anymore. Very seldom anymore. Just, it ain't needed, you know? Well, it was never needed, but you know what I mean. I just, you know.
Well, to me, it's not a need. It's a desire.
I like the taste of it now. If they made a cigarette that tasted like that.
And the smell. Right.
I like the smoke sucker leaves.
What?
The leaves that they throw away.
Oh, yeah, but they should make smoothies out of them. Man, the leaves are nummy. Nummy, nummy, nummy.
There's a few people around here that if I catch them at the right time of year, they'll give me a garbage bag full of sucker leaves.
Nice. That's great.
It's trash to them.
No, it's medicine. Right. Are you kidding?
Yeah. I like that.
Isn't that fun?
I like the flavor, you know? The flavor's there.
Well, I knew a guy way back when you had abundance of seeds in your bag, that he would sow them just to eat them as little suckers, you know, little seedlings, because he said they were the tastiest things ever. He didn't get high off of it. He just enjoyed the taste.
Oh, yeah, you can make hash from them and that. And I call honey oil is when I was a kid is what it was called. Now I don't know what they call it. But, that you just paint a line down a cigarette and you smoke that sucker anywhere and get stoned as hell.
Right, right, right. Yep. Well, I'd love some good hash. Oh, my gosh. I love hash.
Yeah, I ain't had any of that in a couple of years.
You could be in the worst flipping mood of your life and you have a hit of hash, your whole troubles go away.
You know about rabbit hash, don't you?
Never heard of it.
They feed a rabbit nothing but reefer for about 2 weeks. They take their droppings and they make hash out of it.
Ew!
It looks like blonde lemonese. You'd never know the difference.
It will mess you up.
Depending on how good the smoke is that they fed the rabbit.
Well, at least the rabbit doesn't die.
No, it doesn't hurt the rabbit any.
Oh, it probably, happy rabbit.
But they can only do it for so long because the rabbit has to have other nutrients, you know.
Right, right, right. But still, oh my God, no!
You would never know it.
I'd love to be able to grow.
any odd number leaf with fingers on it, uh-huh. If it has an odd number, it contains THC. It's the amount of THC that makes a difference.
Oh. Now, see, I didn't know that. Huh.
I've grown a bunch of it when I was younger.
Oh, yeah. I've grown it, too.
You can take a plant that's like 4 foot tall.
Right.
And it's got what's called a coleus on the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You take that coleus and you stick it in the ground, stake it down.
Okay.
With the sun going across it, and at every node point will shoot up a brand new stalk.
Neat.
So you get, you know, depending on how many node points you have, you'll have basically that many plants off at one.
That's how they grow their wood in Japan. They have a forest of trees, and they node the top of the tree, so the top of the tree grows more trees, and that's what they harvest, not the mothers. But the children, the trees. It's really cool.
I see one that was 18 years old and it was about 20 foot tall.
Really? Wonder if they ever let it go to seed.
That was down in Florida in the national park down there.
Oh.
Well, it's so huge they can't keep track of everybody, you know?
Right.
Oh.
What? Yeah. Florida. Pass. Okay. No problem, man.
Wish I had some.
Yeah.
Well, I got a little bit. I caught a buzz last night so I could sleep.
Oh. I wish that helped me sleep. It doesn't help me sleep. But
I get so wound up sometimes.
Used to do the quarter pound parties back when it wasn't such a hybrid, you know, back in late 70s with the Cheech and Chung paper. We packed that bitch. Oh my God.
I wonder how many of them papers actually got used.
Oh, well, we did. It was amazing. But then again, when you know the people who are growing it, and they're bringing the quarter pound, I mean, that's a lot of dope. And you end up with three joints in front of you, and you get hit on each side because you're not supposed to bogart any joints. But you can't help it because you can only breathe so many times in a minute, you know. And then with the room so full of smoke, you're getting secondhand smoke. I mean, you are stoned. And I don't like to get that stoned where I'm just doing nothing.
I use a one-hitter.
Yeah, I used to do that a lot, too. Yeah.
Well, I'm by myself. There ain't no sense to trying to smoke a joint because it keep going out, you know?
Well, but you waste the paper, too. Yeah, don't waste the tree. Unless it's hemp paper, but then again, that's... gets sticky for a while. I have a doctor up here who would grow his own, and then he'd bring it to me after it cured and have me roll in joints, so I'd be rolling like 300 joints. And the hemp paper from the hemp papers, you're sticky. Mm-hmm. It gets so sticky, by the 25th joint, you got to stop because your fingers are sticking together. And it's hard to roll when your fingers are all together stuck.
I got a pipe that's about 35 years old made by Pyrex.
Whoa.
Water pipe.
Neat.
And that thing is something else.
No more bongs for this lady. Uh-uh. That ended a long time ago.
People drink that water out of them. That shit can give you a disease.
Ooh, what a thought. Oh, what a thought. Yeah.
I know somebody that caught it.
I'd rather water my plants with it.
But I'm drinking it.
No, thanks. I don't do urine either. Ugh.
They used to put all kinds of stuff in it. Wine.
Right.
Beer.
But that,
He says joints are yucky. People slobber on them.
Well, even foals. After this COVID crap and all that, I don't share with nobody. I don't care. I'd roll you one that's yours. If I had
I got a brass one hitter. Just wipe the end off it or something. It's good
to
go.
Lighter. You put a lighter to it. But still, I mean, so much is not known. I mean, we're dealing with synthetic. So much synthetic that the organic can't take care of it. And if it can, then you need extra. And that's a confusion.
I wouldn't buy anything out of them damn dispensaries. I'd buy a local.
Oh, I've had some good edibles, though, man. Even though I used to do a living of edibles.
Yeah, but you don't know what they've done to that stuff.
Well, you know what? What can we do anymore? But I agree with you.
If you know somebody that grows it, you know?
Well, yeah, that'd be great, but I don't. Not like I used to.
Yeah, most of the stuff sold around here is from around here, you know?
Well, I think everybody must get stoned, but that's my opinion.
Hell, it's a lot cheaper. I can get a whole ounce for $100.
What?
Oh, yeah, 100 to 130, depending on the
price. It costs 400 up here.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
here they pretty much grow it most of the year round.
Oh, yeah, it's a three crop or four season kind of thing, yeah. Stardust.
We've been joined by Daryl.
Where'd he go?
I first tried to call in, but apparently it was while you're out on the porch smoking.
It didn't say you called.
Oh.
A lot of planets are retrograde.
Oh, I take that back. It said you called at
12:27.
Yeah. I did call one time.
I mean, you're talking about memories and stuff, you know. The very first time I tried to get high is like when I was 14, and me and my best friend back then, at that time, you know, we had this car, this farmer on the edge of town. You know, we asked him about it, and it was parked out in the pasture, and he says, well, it belongs to my son. And we talked to the son, who lives somewhere else, and he says, yeah, you pull it out of there, you can have it. And so we went back over there, and his dad, he went ahead and pulled it out with his tractor for us. And we had him pull it out, just like a couple blocks away in town to an abandoned house and put it in the carport, you know, kind of like an enclosed carport, except for the end was open, you know? So it was basically like a garage with no door, you know? One day, you know, my friend, he calls me up, and he says, hey, I got someone that wants to buy the head off of that. It was a 55 Studebaker Comanche, you know, so I grabbed my brother's toolbox and pedaled my bicycle in there, and he just used it for excuse because he came across a bag of weed, and he says, hey, you know, the rolling papers had, you know, didn't have no glue on them, right? And I've never rolled a cigarette or nothing, you know, out of rolling papers. Tried to roll it and tried to smoke it, but it fell apart before I could even get anything out of it. And that was the first time I tried to get high.
Yeah, when there's no glue, you wet your finger along the edge of the paper and you pull off a little piece so it's fuzzy. And then it'll stick.
Well, I just sucked on the whole thing and then let it dry, and it worked.
Well, see, I wasn't knowledgeable. You know, I had seen people roll, and they take their tongue and whip the edge of the paper, you know, before they fold it back down and then rub their hands over it, and, you know, but I wasn't proficient at it at all, and it just fell apart. But it wasn't until a couple years later when I went into Job Corps when I was 16, and that was the first time I got high, and it was a trip. I'll never forget that. I don't know what that stuff was, but I remember we're down along to me it was like a creek. You know, some people call it a river, whatever, but it was in Bitterroot Valley in Montana when I was in Job Corps. And man, I got so high, it was exactly like you're looking at the world with a strobe light going off. It was just like
that sounds like it was laced with something.
Yeah, it sounded like it had some kind of chemical in it. We've been joined by the mechanic.
Yay! So wait, can I ask a question of both of you, Stardust Man and Mechanic, before you come in here and tell us something? What is your idea about reincarnation?
I totally believe in reincarnation.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Peyton, for having me in this morning. Appreciate it. Happy Sunday. Good morning, Marlon. Good morning, Daryl. Daryl, your brother Daryl, your cousin Daryl, and the other cousin Daryl.
That's right.
Reincarnation. I'm somewhat of a believer. I'm not all in on the idea. Somewhat of a believer because throughout your life, you will have specific memories, including memories with people and pets that were not yours at one time, but they're yours now. Like there weren't – I've had deja vu moments.
Yeah, that's it.
Of something that should have been a scene in someone else's life.
Vuvas.
Okay. So I've had at least a dozen deja vu experiences in my life. And I don't know. I don't know what – you can't – I don't believe anybody that tells me I used to be this in another life. Okay, no. We've either been stripped of the power to acknowledge past lives. We've never been given the power to know what it is. But I will never believe anybody that unless you can write a whole book and prove it.
What gets me is they have always reincarnated from a king or a queen or somebody important. Where's the shit shovelers?
Now, I was a cover in my past life. Now, that's reality. In my past life, I cleaned up a sewer. That's reality.
There you go. I mean, you don't hear that.
No. You know, it's always this glorified explanation of their previous lives. So I think reincarnation is something they've hidden from the human belief system, the human...
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think it's very real. There's chances that it could be affecting us every day. Sure. I think how we live our lives determines what we come back as or what kind of person we come back as or the life we get. Not. I'm single at 51. I think I've known love. I think I've ruined it and I've lost it. And I was just a complete bitter knucklehead. And, you know, I don't think life is a guarantee of second chances.
Sure it is. And,
there are second chances, yeah, but you're not guaranteed a second chance.
So well, that's true. Yeah, that part's true, right?
You go through life and you make bad choices on the people you have in your life and the company you have in your life. It chances are likely you don't get a second time. You don't get a second round. I mean, you treat people how you get treated, and I think that I think some people are alone, like myself. I'm alone. I made a lot of bad decisions with females, and yeah. I probably should have treated some a little bit better, and they could have treated me a little bit better, or I would have stuck around. There's fault on both sides, you know, and I just think that this love side of the human existence, the love component of the human existence, I think it's detrimental to how you treat others and how you live your life. As to what you come back as in reincarnation.
Now, let me tell you something about this lifetime and what you just got done saying. Because We have been trained to think love is conditional, and it's not. It's unconditional. No expectations. No you gotta's or have to's or whatever, because that's what destroys love. Because when you put limits and statutes on love, you're ending it. You're avoiding it. You're not feeding it to be what it's supposed to be, because love is free. It's everywhere. The trees love us by setting the flowers, that set the fruit. And then you love the tree back by taking and loving it back. That's all unconditional. That's why things are so foobarred with love, because we've created and think it has to be the golden slipper, and it's got to be conditional. It's got to be this way. It's got to be that way. Well, that's what screws it all up.
You know, I agree with you so much, Mona. But, something I wanted to say about, reincarnation. There was a movie out there many years ago. The lead character was Robert Downey Jr. And I forget the blonde-headed woman that was in it. But anyway, at the beginning of the movie, he's in the jewelry shop, and he's buying an engagement ring because he's going to propose to her to marry her. And they were supposed to meet at a restaurant, and he's across the street, and they see each other, wave at each other, and he goes across the street, and he gets hit by a bus and gets killed, right? He goes up to heaven, and he's got to go through this process.
It's a great movie. The name of the movie is Heaven Sent. Okay, right. Go ahead, Daryl. It's a great movie. You're laughing at it, Mona. But it's called Heaven Sent. It's a great movie. Go ahead.
Great movie. The thing is he gets in line, to go through this process, kind of like going to the DMV, right.
Get to the point. You got another chance to come back.
Yeah,
you got a chance to come back.
Yeah, you're supposed to get this shot that makes you forget all your past memories. But he's in such a he's so eager to get back into that life that he runs past without getting his shot, and he's born and years later when he grows up, he just happens to in college meet the one he's supposed to marry, her daughter, and he goes home with her and goes home with her on Thanksgiving, and then the memories start trickling back, and
Flippy says deja vu is better explained by recurrence, whatever that means, recurrence. I don't know that word. But every time I've had one, it was more or less showing me that I've been there. It's like an affirmation. You're in the right place at the right time. Okay, and that something else is going to come out of it, not just your everyday modrum of life's existence, that we go through.
You don't think human beings that live a sorry or poor or an evil life are brought back as a cockroach or a rat?
Well, that's a Buddha kind of thing. And
if you're a guy who set lives free, you live your life. You made it to 80 years old, and everywhere you went in your life, you set people's minds free. You opened people's consciousness, and you were reincarnated into an eagle.
Aww.
You know what I mean? This is what I'm saying. If you're one of these wisdom, you're like an old guy.
You should be a millworm.
You're like your guy who saved whole communities and whole villages and had all the right wisdom. He comes back as an owl.
But feathers, pardon me. God, see where my mind's going? If we didn't play the bad guy, we wouldn't know what the good guy is. And that's where people, I'm sure I've murdered people. I even have a memory or two, but that's all from my cell memory of a past life. But I also remember the times I was enslaved and murdered too, which I don't ever want to go back there again. And that I have been a male, not just, I've been more a male than a female. But
I can't help but think that I'm living the life of somebody who just effed up.
No, you were
my previous lessons. My previous life member, like my previous life owner, I think was a jackass. And I'm paying the cost for that dude's existence. And I think it ends with me.
See, that's what I was saying earlier. I don't understand that, because that makes no sense. I could see it if you understood the reasons and had the past memories and that, but you don't. You know, or 90% of people don't. So you have no, you're paying for a car you've never seen.
You mentioned earlier, you know, about people remembering their, like, some famous person in the past, and that reminds me of
that's
a lot of these
thinking.
That it reminds me of in the past of a lot of people channeling, you know, and they claim, I channeled Jesus
Christ.
Channeling
is totally different than
reincarnation. But it's the way, what he's trying to say, because I would channel shit.
There is 10 or 12 times as many people alive today than were in the biblical days. Where did all the other souls come from?
Here's my opinion on that remember, I don't want to bring up any bad thoughts here, but
why not? You know,
Kerry Cassidy interviewed that boy in Russia who remembered that he was from Mars.
Bushka. Yeah, I know. He's disappeared. Nobody knows where he is.
He went back to Mars. I mean,
that's kind of my point, you know, there's a lot more people here now. So where did all those souls come from? They came from different places in the universe.
But she didn't believe in old souls because of, did you hear that part? I heard that part. That the woman who did the video did not believe in old souls. Now that's, I guess, hijacking.
No, she said that all the souls were created at the same time. I don't believe that.
Well, if you think about the Big Bang, yeah, I think that would have been.
Well,
but there's so
the
much
essence
pride.
Was created, yes, maybe.
Right.
But the particular souls themselves, I don't believe were.
Well, if that was the case, there was a whole bunch of souls who were just hanging out there in the ether,
right,
waiting for their time to be created into transferred into a body, you know?
Right, right. Where did the consciousness come from? Now, some states.
Like I said earlier, I believe in reincarnation, but I've never been here. That means I had to have been somewhere else.
Mars.
Yeah.
Okay, now, there is a level of progression of consciousness. Now, this is what I've read, I kind of believe it, that we all start off as rocks or mud or something else. It's all elemental. And it depends
that's the Eastern religions.
It depends on the desire of each of us. That is where we go. Not basically, because I keep going back to Celestine prophecies, where there's two of them that I remember, even though there's four of them. But there's the poor me and the pity me, because the spirit or soul wants that attention or that kind of mission to basically
What good would be spending time as a rock do for your soul?
Well, because of the environment of life and the conditions that go on, and then you move to another element, which would be an animal or an insect.
Stop and think about it. In the daytime, trolls were supposedly rocks. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, like everything's alive, even rocks. But, you know, what that really,
never-ending
story, right? When you talk about rocks, what it really makes me think of is the two movies, Never Ending Story.
Right, that was it, right. No, I know I first came as a mud puddle. I know it, because I did past life regression, and that's what it was. And my first
is that why? Is that why children love stomping in mud puddles so much?
Well, I don't know. We used to make mud pies. I know, remember stomping in them. Why would you want that dirty mess? But anyway.
Well, I did when I was a kid. I loved the splashing.
You probably like dirty messes. I mean, you're a mechanic, and you can get your hands all greasy and grease all over you, and you love it. But if I got grease on me, I'd have to find somewhere fast to wash.
Well, I was raised as a child. I was raised as a child.
Spending time.
Right.
Manifestor Sue's spending time as a rock would be great for your soul. I think it's be like meditating forever.
Yeah.
Well, at least. But you're still going through all the elements. Life is still happening around you. Imagine that you had the consciousness of watching. Now you probably get, you know. But I'm tired of just sitting there. But think about Max the Crystal Skull. That crystal's not even made on this planet. And
think about the dog that's going to pee on you.
Yeah, but it might have been a hot day and it was salty, and so you felt good after you got pissed on.
We've been joined by Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
We're still going. Question asked, what do you believe or do you believe, or what are your thoughts of reincarnation?
Well, if you want to see what life is like as a rock, you should probably ask Fetterman about that.
Yeah, and they keep coming back as rocks, just in different forms, right?
Yeah, and AOC and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. We got a bunch of rocks in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even a rock knows enough to keep their mouth shut.
Well, there's no insult to rocks, because rocks do serve a useful purpose.
Well, crystals. What about crystals? Wouldn't that be the next step of a rock?
Well, crystals aren't rocks.
No.
Well, they're made of rocks.
They're a step up from a rock.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're no less equally prevalent. Yeah. I mean,
just ask the guy down the street from my house who has no teeth. He knows all about crystal.
And crystals keep growing.
I want to hear what my mechanic just said. What? Mechanic, what did you just say that you got runned over?
So, I'm sorry, I'm muted. So, the diamond manipulated like paper was against hemp, where they got marijuana and hemp illegal. Marijuana wasn't illegalized. It wasn't made illegal because of its, you know, effects. All right. It was made illegal because the propagandists behind the pulp industry and the ink industry and the newspapers and all this got together and lobbied Congress to pass all these laws against. Okay.
Yeah,
no difference. The diamond. You take a look at the diamond. You got slaves, children bleeding, sweating, and dying in these mines for these diamonds, and they're readily available. They're pulled out so many diamonds, it's unbelievable. It's like sand down there, diamonds. You come up here in the United States, the propaganda is, okay, that they're hard to come by. They're rare. They're a rarity. The bigger, the better. Buy one for your wife. Prove to her you're lover.
Okay, now can I say something?
Propaganda. The diamond is garbage. Go ahead.
Okay, but not really, because it was one of our first record player needles that made us hear – be able to hear the sounds, but and it's good for carving. I mean, diamond is the hardest structure substance, but that's like saying gold, you know, silver is more valuable, but gold's at a higher cost. See, we all have CBD receptors. We're all supposed to have marijuana in our existence of physical, because it cures, it heals, it mediates, it regulates. I mean, you know, if you just ingested it too, like a smoothie or whatever, look how many seizures got broken because they
we have We have receptors in our brains to allow THC to enter our system. And it is one of the oldest known plants in existence. And yeah, it's seeds are considered the most nutritious food.
The only reason
it's
illegal is because Big Pharma doesn't want the competition.
Painter, you are absolutely right, Painter. I want you to continue.
But they limited us to have it. Everything that we have in our life today has been denied us, or let's say we've been denied so much that we should have in our lives today. No wonder people are ignorant and dumb as rocks away from the keyboard.
Well, you know, even the Bible says that seed-bearing herbs should be eaten and not smoked. So it's not a bad thing to chew a bud.
You know, Mona, you said one word that was spot on to what Mechanic was saying. You said regulated. Diamonds are regulated. Mechanic was spot on with that. There is
90% of the diamond market is owned by De Beers.
Yeah.
Yes. And all these diamonds are in a vault. Even Russia has a huge vault of old.
I was going to say, do you remember when the civil war was going on over in the Congo and Sierra Leone? They had people, kids, little kids, were digging through the mud and strip mining for diamonds. And
blood
De Beers
diamonds.
Was almost the sole buyer of all the diamonds over there.
Exactly.
And they got
Control the market, and they decide.
Yeah, that's why they keep them off the market, is that they can keep the prices really high for a chunk of carbon. And like, I don't find a whole lot of use for diamonds except for cutting tools and maybe putting them in optics or something. But that's about it. But the fact, you know, you're going to pay $2,000 or $2,500 for a diamond ring to make your wife happy or your girlfriend happy, it's like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
sorry, ladies, I'm taken.
Well, it's like that song, you know, years ago. You're so vain. I bet you think this song is about you. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
why
buy a diamond just to look at it? I mean, what the F is that about? You know,
there's plenty of metal. There's plenty of metals out there that are worth more than diamonds. Platinum.
You know, worth more than gold.
A ring made out of platinum will shine. You know, make a diamond look.
That's why they have a gold album.
Well, platinum and gold and silver are limited resources. There's only so much of that, but we can make diamonds now. Okay, they found out how to compress the carbon down to where they can actually make diamonds.
It just isn't.
Can we talk about carbon?
Isn't profitable yet?
I want to talk about carbon. Scale. Can we talk about carbon?
No, we're carbon neutral on this show.
We talking about ourselves. We the carbon.
We are the carbon these MFers want to get rid of. All right? When they talk about innovating to zero, when they talk about net zero carbon, no such thing. As long as there are human beings on planet Earth, there will be carbon. As long as there are trees, plants, there will be carbon.
Yeah,
it's already
as long as there's Earth, there's going to be carbon.
Well, it is a non-talking point. There is no such thing as getting rid of carbon on planet Earth. No such thing. It's a lie. If it's duped.
It ain't going to ever happen.
Never going to happen.
Now these crazy people want to take trees and bury them in the ground.
That's Bill Gates. He wants to cut down millions of acres of trees and bury them in the ground to stop climate change.
Yes, because he doesn't believe this. They want here's the design, and it's in writing by the Department of Defense, by DARPA. It's in writing. The plan for the United States is to suck as much oxygen out of the air as possible, to have limited oxygen resources for human beings. Sounds ridiculous. Sounds like a movie. Sounds like a nonfiction book or a fiction book. But let me tell you what.
Sounds like a James Bond villain.
It's real. They are now making and manufacturing, and I think they already have in place, carbon CO2 vacuums, where they are literally sucking CO2 out of the air in certain regions. So I don't even know how all that works technically.
Yeah, and then they have the farmers. Well, then they have the farmers in the greenhouses with the CO2 making machines to keep the get their plants going. Okay, you're never going to get rid of carbon. It's impossible.
You cannot.
It is the cornerstone of the planet. Building a block of the planet.
Carbon is life. Carbon is life.
So whenever I always crack up when I hear him talking about carbon neutral or zero net zero carbon emission, all that other crap. It's like, you're not going to do it, and there's no point in it.
Yeah, it just and they're tooting around, and these Teslas driving around, they are ticking time bombs. They are IMF ready. IMP. Yeah, they are ready. Any kind of electric pulse or like overly generated sun, solar, whatever, ray or whatever, these things could be targeted by those directed energy weapons in ways where we're not even – I mean, I'm just now breaking the surface of this technology, the directed energy weapons. I mean, Judy Woods got me into it in 2002 when I started listening to her, and she vanished after talking about it. If you don't know who Judy Woods is, she's the one who said directed energy weapons took down the towers at 9/11. All right?
Yeah. It's kind of like what's her name that she used to have a talk show and then she mentioned about Michael, Michelle, as a trans.
Oh, you're talking about Joan Rivers calling out the trans.
Yeah.
Big Mike.
Talked. She got wiped off the map.
She was killed. You can't call. Listen, they would love to put Gavin Newsom and Big Mike in the White House. All right? They would love it. Two of the biggest knuckleheads on the planet running this country. Can you imagine?
It would be worse than what we have now, if that's even possible.
It's possible. It's possible.
It's possible, yeah.
It's definitely possible because we're hell is still coming. Hell hasn't even come here yet. They want us all starving and compliant. They want people living in districts, 10 districts to be exact for you. They want to divide this country into actual border lines, vaccine checkpoints, the whole thing. They want it all. They want a complete totalitarian state here in the U.S. And I think there's only one thing stopping them. Only one thing. Because they'll take it by force if they can. They will. They will. But the reason they don't try is that one thing. It's that one thing that 400 million of these things are around the country.
Yeah, their Second Amendment.
They can't achieve their goals until they disarm this nation. It is the one stable that not only us are dependent on, but the rest of the world. Listen to the rhetoric. Read the rhetoric. Hear it. The rest of the world during COVID, where are the Americans? How come they're not pushing them back? Where are the rebel yell? Where's the rebel yell? Where's the Billy Idol of the world? America, taking a knee right now, in my opinion. Taking a knee. There should be a bunch of hard lines. Gates, I'm more and more impressed with this guy. Gates, go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's the reason that Japan never invaded the U.S. mainland. Was because everybody here was armed, and
the prime minister said at the time was that there was a gun under every blade of grass.
Yeah, because the guy who said it, he was educated in America, so he knew what he was looking at, and he went back and he told, he told the emperor. He said, "Yeah, we can't invade America. It's impossible.
Occupy." You would have to come here and occupy. And what's going on with the borders is exactly how you occupy a nation. So this guy.
Oh, yeah, that changed the demographics. That's changed the demographics of the United States, where the Caucasians was a minority. And they're changing it so the blacks are the minority.
Well, it's not even the blacks. It's the culture. Is the minority. Well, they want to change the culture.
I'm not saying all black now. I'm including the Mexicans in there.
Yeah.
They're not Caucasian.
Only 6% of what's crossing the border right now is Latino. They are bringing over people from Somalia, Nigeria, all these other nations that are in major turmoil. And they're bringing them here.
When we pulled out of
Palestine.
Yeah, when we pulled out of Afghanistan, they dropped 10,000 Afghani men of military age at Fort McCoy here in Wisconsin. Nobody knows where they are. Okay, 10,000 of them. And they just basically walked off the base and
disappeared. Well, they're not at Martha's Vineyard.
No. Well, you know, get ready. Prepare yourselves, folks. If you're living in the big cities, there will be. It's going to be a new America. And because we're going to be introduced into equity here in the country, we are also going to start being subjected to bombings. Yeah, terrorist bombings, yep. Nut bombings, pipe bombings in public areas, restaurants. You can look at Beverly Hills being blown up. You can look at New York, L.A., San Diego, Orange County, terrorist attacks. That's right.
Look at the fight that's
going on now.
That's
how they live their life. Part of the culture. They got nothing to live for. Their lives suck. So they will kill people on the way out.
Well, look at look at the fight that's going on now in the cities, simply because Hamas blew a bunch of rockets into Israel. You got people in American cities are butting heads with each other over that. And I'm just like, I'm sitting back eating my popcorn watching the show because it's like, that's something to pay attention to. It's not our fight. Why are you guys in American cities fighting over it? Well, because there's a whole bunch of people that came over from the Middle East, and then you have the Jewish populations in these big cities. Everybody's picking a side, and it's like, how come nobody's on America's side? How come everybody's on that side or that side, but nobody's on our side?
There's been some pretty big protests here just lately. Of people, pro-Palestinian people, protesting, talking about, how the Jewish people for years and years have been slaughtering Palestinian people, and
well, they have.
They're not really pro-Hamas. They're just pro-Palestinians, and they're pissed off about the Palestinian people that are getting mixed up and killed in this crossfire between the two,
Well, everybody keeps running around yelling and screaming, and they go, the poor, innocent Jewish people in Israel, they're so poor, and these guys are dirtbags. And then the other side is like, oh, my God, the poor people in Gaza Strip, and they're so innocent. It's like nobody's innocent in this. These guys have been fighting each other for 1,000 years or more. Okay, they've been killing each other off left, right, and center. Then there's always a big dust up, and I'm sitting back on like, we don't need to be involved in this. Okay, we don't need to be sending money. We don't need to be sending weapons. Let them fight it out like they always do. And
we need to resign from being the world's referee, the world's mediator. We need to basically, the protocol should be immediately from the next president is to recall. All shut down all foreign military bases across the globe. Remove
one,
all
one floated that idea before.
Across the globe. And that globe, I said globe. And bring that whole group of military men and women back to this country and start rebuilding this country, rebuilding our borders, putting together real, sustainable financial systems that allow the most weakest, smallest peon of a man and a woman or a family to survive, to get up a level. That's real equity. You don't give people success. You give them the road to success. That is how you sustain it.
Why are we around the world defending everybody else's borders when ours is wide open?
That gets me.
New world order.
I don't understand that.
They're being invaded. We have to send money. They're being attacked. We have to send money.
Oh, we don't.
We are being invaded. We are being attacked.
You know how much money this country is in debt for right now? Everybody keeps floating $33 trillion. The real numbers on that, when you factor in all the little nitty gritty details that nobody wants to talk about, we're pretty close to $250 to $300 trillion in debt. Okay, we're not going to crawl out of this hole by giving everybody else future generations money.
No, it's $33 trillion.
Well,
that's the debt. $33.5 trillion is the debt right now.
Yeah, it's the grandkids' money that you're giving away.
Not really. I got a theory on that. Not really. It's fiat. It's a privately owned bank who's putting – it's the money has no value. It's not real money. It's fake. And we are on this system where we're now in debt because Congress couldn't do anything about it? No. You go back
Congress
to –
Congress wouldn't do anything about it.
You go back, and this is not on the American people. What has happened in December 23, 1933, is not on the American people. All right, that's on a few elite. Hey, that's on a few elite pinheads that really screwed us. And we're responsible for this debt? No, I don't think so. What happens if we just say, we bring it? Like I said, my first part of my plan, we bring everybody back from around the world, secure our borders first. And then we tell the Fed, you're $33 trillion? Screw you. Come and get it. That's what we tell them.
Go back to 1913 when Wilson signed in the Federal Reserve Act and Congress started borrowing money. I want to know, where did the Fed get the money?
Printing money.
Yeah, that's it. That's all they did. They made an entry into a ledger, and then they started the printing machines going, and that's it. There's nothing backing the Federal Reserve notes. It's simply, like they say, printed out of thin air.
At first, I'm sure it had to do with the amount of currency in circulation.
Well, it was supposed to be
what they
that.
Did
when
after
had,
that.
You
know,
we had six
what they done after
currency.
That's a different story.
Yeah, we had six different kinds of paper currency back in 1913. It was the gold certificates, silver certificates. There were U.S. notes.
Well, even each state had their own issue of money, too. And that was a big problem at the time because Alabama wouldn't take Georgia's money.
Well, each of the individual banks that were out there, those little privately owned banks that were out there, they all had their own currency too, and they couldn't. That was the big problem too. They couldn't. The one bank would not acknowledge another bank's money,
another bank's existence.
So
that was one of the reasons. So, I mean, this wasn't a bad thing. It became a bad thing because of the way it was.
Well, even back in the 1800s, when Andrew Jackson saw what was going on with the central bank and how it was putting our country into debt, he killed that thing. He just said, "Nope, you're not getting a new charter. Once this one's up, you're done." And then Biddle, who was running the Second National Bank, tried to recalling. He contracted the money supply and everybody started screaming and hollering. There's not enough money, and there's runaway inflation.
The banks started keeping it. That was 1832.
But when the bank finally folded up, our currency became worth something. We had a great, except for the Civil War period, we had a great growth in this country. We were going balls to the wall.
100 years nearly.
Yeah. So then 1913, we got screwed over and everything went to hell. Then we went bankrupt
in 1933.
And
because I think that these are bankers' wars, all of these are bankers' wars.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
So World War I by design, a bankers' war. World War II by design, bankers' war. It's my understanding that Hitler was actually the son of Rockefeller himself. I guess the mother died in the hospital, raised by another mother, some different name or whatever, but that ended up being Hitler. So then he was groomed for World War II, which was another huge, huge depopulation agenda, land grab, reorchestration of the global interest by these elite. There were corporations playing both sides of those wars.
Are you kidding me?
Your guy, Prescott Bush Senior, this guy is the guy Capital Oil, I believe. U.S. Capital Oil, I believe. Not only that, Ford was supplying both sides of the war, Coca-Cola, all kinds of organizations and companies. So these are the bankers. And again, this is what we're looking at today. These guns that they found in the hands of Hamas, okay, came from the United States via Ukraine, via Afghanistan.
Yeah, I was going to say a prime example of the both sides of the war thing was the Rockefellers during the Vietnam War. They had all this industry that was supplying our military. They had all those contracts and everything. So they were making money on that end. But they were also supplying the North Vietnamese. And they were doing it through an intermediary because during the war, they couldn't directly trade with the North Vietnamese. So they were trading with this other country over in Europe. They were sending the raw materials over there. They were getting paid. They would turn that into whatever parts that the North Vietnamese army needed, and then that would go through the Soviet Union, and that would be shipped into North Vietnam. And the Rockefellers knew this. They didn't care because they were making money financing both sides of this thing to keep it going. Well, gee, the North Vietnamese army's getting blown back. What do they need? Okay, good. So send that material over there to get it processed and get them back on track again. So, yeah, these guys, they finance both sides. They don't care how many people get killed in it. That's not a, their kids aren't going off to fight. Now, if Joe Biden wants to get into a war in Ukraine, why doesn't Hunter go over there and start fighting?
I don't think he'd be very good at it.
Well, Hunter's over there. He's just not fighting. He's doing
yeah, he's busy. He's busy.
He's trafficking
up white lines.
He's trafficking. He's
looking for the white line in the middle of the road.
We've been hijacked. The whole country's been hijacked, and we're about to be hand delivered on a platter an opportunity to prove that we deserve this country. We deserve the freedom that we were given. We deserve the republic that we were promised. We're going to be given an opportunity. We are to either hold on to it, lose it, and our lives at the same time. Those are the options.
I've just been waiting on to, don't know why it hasn't already happened, is while all this mess is going on right now, I'm really kind of wondering why China hasn't already gone to reclaim Taiwan amongst all this mess, because they have
economically.
But I mean, there's too many irons in the fire right now. I mean,
Well, they're probably being sold.
That's all they're interested in is the money.
They're
getting a lot of that from South Africa or from Africa. They're investing like crazy everywhere in the world. Building infrastructure, I come to save the day, but it's going to cost you.
They're giving out loans. They took a play out of IMF where they come in there and they do shit and give them a loan that they know they're never going to be able to pay back.
Never going to pay it back.
That's the playbook.
Which gives them political power.
But here's another take on Taiwan.
Let him finish, Nick.
Oh, I thought he was. Sorry.
I'm just going to say eventually, they're going to say it's time to pay up. You can't afford to pay us? Well, pay us by giving us land. One of the biggest things that, in my opinion, that Russia, biggest mistake they ever did was selling us Alaska. Over.
Well, we gave some of that back to them, too.
Yeah, I don't know if it was entirely a mistake,
but here's the thing about Taiwan, though. The reason this is just kind of like a armchair quarterbacking here. The reason that they haven't gone full board to take over Taiwan is we have too much of our industry over there, and we have already told China if they invade Taiwan, then we're going to war with them. All those companies that have their factories and slaves over in China. that China's making money on will have to stop immediately. They'll have to shut everything down, and China will go will absolutely go belly up. I mean, their economy's already up shit creek anyway.
Well, do you think maybe that they're just waiting for us to spend all our
that's yeah, probably that too. Yeah, probably too. Yeah, that's probably part of a strategy.
Yeah, wait
too.
For us to spend all our stockpiles of munitions between Ukraine and Israel and know the right time to do that invasion, because we won't have shit left to fight with.
Or they're probably
The only thing we're sending to Ukraine is obsolete shit that we don't need no more. And it either needs to be destroyed or used. If they use it, they can replace.
Well, here's another question. How did Hamas get all of the American military equipment? I wonder where that came from.
Ukraine and Afghanistan.
Yeah, of course.
Can I mention something that is just I find totally this is part of the problem with the country that I love, known as America. This is part of the problem. It's one of the issues with America, is that we have probably per capita the largest amount of organized stupidity. Okay? Organized stupidity. All right, walk with me. In Palestine, as well as many other Arabic nations, they kill homosexuals on sight. They don't make examples out of homosexuals in the middle of
cities. Throw them off top of the roof.
They will continue to do so because it is considered the ultimate blasphemy in their religion. They find homosexual to be an unforgivable sin. Okay? In New York City, in San Francisco, in LA, around this country, but the United States has a population of controlled idiots painting billboards with little sticks to hold up their signs. Queers for Palestine.
Jeez.
Clearly, there's been a miscommunication here. Clearly, someone did not get the memo. Okay.
Yeah. How come there's no big
Palestine as a homosexual? But I got news for you. Palestine does not support you as a homosexual. Okay.
How come there's no big pride marches over in the Gaza Strip or Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, good luck with that. Exactly. Show me it. I want to see the nightclub that has a drag queen show for kids in Palestine.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But I bet you can find a drag queen show in Israel. I bet you can find a drag queen show in Israel, but you won't find a drag queen show in Palestine.
Well, you know, the thing about Russia is they say you can go ahead, but keep it to yourself. Don't flash it out in front of everyone, you know?
LGBT propaganda is illegal in Russia.
Good.
You're gay, but you can't wear a shirt letting everybody know you're gay.
That's just like these women coming over and yelling that they want rights for the Arabs. They can't even go in their own country and say that.
They don't give a damn about your rights, lady.
Burkas. Anybody remember burkas? No, they don't care in this states either, but they're a lot more lenient.
Well, have you ever seen the photographs from like Iran from the 1960s and 70s? They were way more free and open back then than they are now. But when the Taliban took over, when these radical fundamentalist Muslims took over, everything's changed, and they everything just it got locked down the way it is now. Everything, you know, when the Ayatollahs took over Iran and the rest of it, when they finally booted the Shah out, it all turned into a theocracy instead of a free and open society. So you've got that issue to deal with. And these people, when you talk about radicals, I mean, these Muslims are – the radical ones are extremely – I mean, they blow themselves up, okay?
Yeah. It's like queers for – this is great. This is a meme right here.
Yeah. For queers 72 for virgins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody said they were going to be women either. They just said virgins.
Yeah. Oh, nice. They could come with a penis. Watch out. Queers for Palestine is no different than cows going out and protesting for McDonald's.
Chick-fil-A.
I mean, that's probably not even McDonald's, because that's probably not even real beef in there. So it's probably like cows protesting for In-N-Out Burger, right? Because we know
probably a lot of these abducted children are part of those beef patties too, you know.
Oh, don't go there. But it's how sad of a truth that.
Well, I mean, let's get real.
Soylent yeah. Green was in 2023.
Seriously?
Yeah. The starvation started in 2023. The human race will be without food by 2023. We will have to consume the dead.
Did you ever read the book that movie was based on? It's called a book called More Room, More Room. And I went and read it because, you know,
More Room?
I
was, yeah, that sounds
yeah, like More Room, More Room. That was the name of the book. The whole thing, it wasn't quite the way that the movie made it out to be, which was they were turning people into food. That was kind of incidental in the book. The idea behind the book was a whole novel with the idea of overpopulation was the central theme. And it was almost an advocacy for abortions and birth control and all the rest of it. And this is kind of what's going to happen if we have too many people on the planet. You know, when New York City alone has a population of 40 million people.
Not anymore.
Well, this was in the book. And so it was kind of, that's what they were pushing in the book. And when they made the film out of it, it was more like, oh, we're eating people and we don't know it kind of thing, which actually was a better story, but that's what they were pushing in the novel.
Yeah, the green slime is people.
No, the pink slime.
Pink slime.
Yeah, well, how many people here has seen the movie Cloud Atlas? You know, the one with Tom Hanks and all the movie stars that were in it.
I couldn't watch it. That was boring as hell.
Yeah, I can't watch Tom Hanks anymore.
But, well, there is one part of that movie where, you know, the servants in the, you know, the Asian servants in these restaurants, how they get recycled. And they you know, every so often, you know, they wear this ring around their neck and, you know, one of them tries to escape and, of course, you know, it literally slices your throat open and kills you, right? But on that band, you know, for every so often you get a little implanted star on it, and when you get so many stars, you ascend and you get to go to a better world, right? And they have this big ritual of this ascension process, them getting ascended, and they show this ascension process, and then you know, and so they leave and they go through this door to their ascension. And then in reality is after they go through this door, they sit down, and then they're killed. And then they take this device that clamps their right around their ankles and pulls them out through this slot, and they're hanging there dead. And the first thing you see is this big old circular saw that cuts their head off because they're in the process of being slaughtered to be turned into the food that they feed those slave Asian restaurant workers, you know?
They're about to do the same thing here. They have a plan to take the corpses of dead cows, the remains of dead cows, grind them up to a pulp and put them back into the food supply.
I think they do that now anyway.
That's bad cow, isn't it?
Yeah,
well, that's called pink slime.
That's how they create disease. That's how they create disease, and that's how they get everybody sick.
That's how mad cow came about, because they were grinding up the dead cows and putting them into the feed that they were giving to the cows.
They're going to be doing it again.
So making the world cannibal.
It's just, you're going to have to go to local ranchers, folks. You're going to have to start finding a way to source your food, to get another out. I mean, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, well, they've already done these tests on McDonald's burgers, And they found human DNA in it.
Yeah, they found DNA.
Chickens and pigs are natural cannibals, you know.
Chickens, you know, and pigs don't have quite the same intelligence that people do.
No, but they will eat flesh.
Oh, yeah. That's how the mob used to get rid of people. They used to drive them out of New York down to Pennsylvania farms and toss the body in the pig pen. What body? What are you talking about?
Yeah, because not only can pigs break bone, but they digest bone.
Yeah. So the only thing that the only thing pigs won't get rid of is the teeth.
Yeah, the teeth will come out in their poop.
Okay. Is there that brown lump over there that's smiling at you?
Speaking of poop, you know, there's a program. It's called Sewage Scan. And what they do is they go around different counties in the United States, and they sell a product. And the product is basically a PCR test for the water sewage company. So your water district will be sold this PCR test, and it'll be attached to the sewage where they're going to start testing for pathogens, drug use, you name it, they're going to be testing for it. And there's limited obligation from the third party to supply the data that they collect to the water district or the people of the town. Furthermore, they're harvesting 2 to 3 times a week for $2,000 to $3,000 each poop samples, and then paying the public health department a check for said poop samples. Okay, so they get a check.
Well, in a name.
So what I've done, because they're selling my poop without my consent, they're collecting DNA and various other data from my poop without my consent. Mm-hmm. I have launched a campaign to shut them down. And here's the latest. 3 weeks ago, I walked in there and I asked for an email of a place to send an invoice. A few days later, an invoice was sent. And then a threat was made by the county to sue over defrauding the government by asking for money with no status for money. Why are you asking for money? You're making a claim. You're giving us, they think in their mind, you're giving us an invoice for a dollar amount, and we don't owe you this. So we're going to turn around and charge you with defrauding the government. Turns out that the DA, not in on it, was not aware of it. Once again, the county talking out their ass. So, continuing, I go in there on Thursday. This is 3 days ago. And I said, I made a FOIA request for the oath of office, the bond, the whole gamut of the water district. They want to fight? Let's fight. So at this moment, the word gets over to the general manager of the water district that I'm in the building. So he confronts me, and he's cool, very casual, shakes my hand. How you doing? I know who you are. I know what you're up to. I appreciate your efforts. And as a result, you are going to be on the agenda next week. They're going to now vote on this thing again. And I'm going to go make another case. And I'm going to get this thing removed. To my delight, it is going to piss off public health. They put a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of money into this. And now they're going to lose their little baby.
You know, Mechanica, I saw that video you put out there about you approaching your local government, and I say, thank you for standing up, you know, over.
Really, I agree.
They're a bunch of pinheads. And not only are they collecting the data from a third party, which they have no control of, right? They have no obligation to share the data that they collect, only if there's a COVID outbreak. That's it. The only data available to the joining authority in the program is a COVID increase or decrease. That's it.
What are they doing with all that data anyway?
Yeah, it makes you wonder. Well, these companies receive grants from the state of California. I'm guessing it goes right back to the government for a price.
Yeah, you know, entities like that, I no longer call them a government. That's why I call them a goobermint.
Goobermint. Sounds good.
Yes, it
with
does.
Peanut butter. With goober butter. There's just a line in the sand that needs to be drawn by the American people, and it hasn't been drawn yet. We continue to have it pushed back and further back.
That's our fault.
Until we're up against the wall completely. Well, what, Nick?
We keep drawing that line in the
sand. You're absolutely right. It's our fault.
We keep drawing that line in the sand, and we dare them to cross it, and they do.
Oh, they won't do this.
We keep drawing another line.
Hell, they won't.
We draw another line. They cross it. So we draw another line, and they cross it. At some point, you know, there's not going to be any room left to draw another line.
It's going to come down to the guns.
Yeah, but at least the people are listening, and they're trying to see that there is a wrong here. And they're willing to try to help make a right. So I think that's pretty cool, actually, personally.
Well, this kind of sums up the way the government is. I don't know if anybody saw that video that came out of Massachusetts at one of the town council meetings in one of the smaller towns just north of Boston. This guy got up there and he was hammering the town council, you know, about whatever was affecting him. The woman town council on the town council board, she just told the guy, go F yourself. Right into the microphone. And that right there sums up the government's basic opinion of you on any level. They don't care. You know, they're going to do what they want to do, and you can make all the noise you want. But until you physically stop them from doing something, they're just going to keep on doing it. So Mecca is right. It's going to come down to the guns.
Mecca?
It's going to come down to the guns. Because that's everything else can be manipulated to the point where they're content with it. The one thing they can't manipulate is the gun owner. They're up against the wall when it comes to the gun owner in America, and they know this. They know it.
Right.
Well, they're trying to, though.
Well,
see, that's the thing.
You know,
go ahead.
Something that happened in my local neighborhood or town, whatever you want to say, is, you know, people did speak up, and they went in front of City Hall and protested, and that was this Chinese corporation that was wanting to do this crypto mining operation, and they made a difference. They pulled back, and the whole reason they went into buying that property is because they thought the property was in the county level. Well, even the city didn't know whether it was county or city because
of that. That's pathetic.
Yeah, and then when they started looking into it, then they saw that it was city. So you know, the mayor really backed it. You know, I got to be proud of our mayor for doing that. And they stopped it because of these centers that already exist. The sound is so horrific 24/7 a day that the people living near it are being driven crazy.
Right. Oh my gosh, what a thought. Oh. Ugh.
Well, at least the people in my community stood up and protested against it, and then that sparked legislation statewide on changing the rules for sound ordinances on the crypto mining companies that wants to come in and do the amount of electricity they were going to be using was.
You remember when Billy Hayes was around? Remember Billy Hayes?
Yes, yes.
All right. So he's let me say this, that he would talk about the cell towers, right? They
are
because of the vibrations that they contain and what they're doing, they're liquefying the earth. There's a constant shuddering, I guess is what you would call it, which is what liquefies the
frequency. Yeah.
Right. So that's one thing about when you talk to somebody about the Schumann resonance, it's kind of hard to believe, but then the Earth is a lot more stronger than a bunch of man-made bullshit. But anyway, I can see that happening by a machine being on all the time like that. Even if you aren't hearing it, it could still do something to the surrounding environment.
You know, just the other day, I was looking at Billy Hayes' old Facebook page, and for me, it seemed like he passed away years ago, but it's only been like a year and a half since Billy Hayes passed away.
It was after Mike. It was long after Mike. Can you believe it's been 4 years from Mike?
Has it been that long already?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we just recently, just a few weeks ago, passed the anniversary date of when he passed away, you know?
Yeah. I didn't realize it was 4 years. It seems like it was like maybe like 2 years ago.
No,
it was 2019. Because I remember he passed away like close to a year.
25th it was.
Yeah, he passed away like. He passed away close to a year after my wife passed away.
Huh. I got him right on my shelf right there.
Yeah. Well, he missed all the fun with the last 3 years.
Oh, he's not missing it. Trust
me. But anyway, we've got him to
thank for this radio station.
That's true. So
please donate, because if it wasn't for your listeners, we would not have been here for all these years to educate you. You know.
Send us money.
Yes, please. We're desperate.
Yeah.
But you were talking about the frequencies of leaving like machines on 24/7.
Right.
And I remember when I saw an interview with Eddie Van Halen when he was getting sick, and he had to have surgery to have parts of his tongue removed because he had cancer in his mouth. Yeah. And they said, well, you know, is it because they kept asking, is it because you were all the smoking that you did? And he goes, no, it wasn't because of the smoking. It was because I kept putting my pick in my mouth when I would use my right hand to do the finger tapping on the fretboard on the neck of the guitar.
Wow. Right.
And that he used a metal pick.
Oh.
And he goes, wow. This is what he said. He said, I worked in a very high electromagnetic frequency environment because of my job, because of what he did. You know, there's electronics all around him all the time. That thing was like an antenna picking all that stuff up and focusing.
You know,
because that's where the cancer was. It was right where he put the pick in his mouth.
You know, if anyone should have come down with tongue cancer, it should have been Gene Simmons.
Oh God.
Oh God. Yeah. Well, I don't think his ego would allow it.
Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons is right up there.
Makes a difference either.
He's what?
That scumbag piece of it. That dude is the same. He's no different than Howard Stern. He's no different than Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's no different than all these clowns that got up there, like Jimmy Kimmel. All these clowns that got up there and made public statements about the unvaccinated.
Right.
Like you want to roam around among us?
Well, unvaccinated? With Gene Simmons, I could tolerate Gene Simmons. I mean, I thought Kiss was, you know, they were okay band and all of that. You know, they had some good tunes that I like listened to and a whole bunch I didn't. But when, and I didn't have to
they
deal
were assholes
with his ego,
at the
but
beginning.
When he came out, when he came out and he start. Said that if you're not vaccinated, you are an enemy of the country. I was
That's
like,
right.
I'm done with you.
Say that again, Thomas, the asshole statement.
They were an asshole band from the beginning. I worked for them.
Oh, did you?
I seen them before anybody seen them without makeup.
Hey, that makes me ask you, Thomas, back in the 70s, I know it was like probably 77, 78, something like that. I went to a concert. And
that's when they started
Georgia.
Getting big.
Yeah.
What they did was, it was a marketing scheme. They didn't want to be famous. They wanted to be rich. That's why they put the makeup on. So you couldn't tell who they were. And they marketed their stuff to 12-year-olds.
Whoa.
So that's they got a following when they were young, which followed them all the way through their career.
And Gene Simmons is a marketing ploy.
It sounds more like a psyop than a marketing ploy, but then they go hand in hand, you know.
Well, that's why you see KISS is not just a band, it's a product. They stamped the KISS name on everything that they can get their hands on.
So were they jealous of Mick Jagger with the tongue thing?
Hey, nobody has the lips like Mick Jagger.
You didn't have many bands that did that, but, you know, there were a few.
You know
that was looking at it as that way, you know?
Hey, you know, there was two movies that Mick Jagger that was in that I really liked the heck out of. One was that futuristic movie where they had to capture someone dying at the right moment and then bring them into the future, and then they would transfer their mind into that body.
And Sarah Ladd in it too, right? Was it about airplanes?
I forget the name of the movie, but the other one, the one I liked the
Millennium?
Most. No, I don't think Millennium was the name. It was
Flatliners.
Flatliners.
No,
that
not
was Kevin
Flatliner.
Yeah, right.
You'll get close though. But anyway, the other movie I really really loved was the one where Mick Jagger played the leading role, and I forget his name, but it was in Australia. The dude would have been the equivalent of Jesse James.
I think the movie that you were talking about before was called Free Jack.
Yes, Free Jack. Correct.
Free Jack was about drugs, wasn't it?
Well, it was.
I don't know. I've never actually seen it. So,
well, it was an awesome movie. Because basically, the movie starts out about this what do you call it? race car? You know, the ones where the wheels are exposed. You know, the really fast ones.
Formula
and the dude gets in action, and there's this overhead bridge. And he gets launched in there and crashes into that overhead bridge and is instantly killed. But being they had a time step exactly when it was, they go to that bridge and they are able to pull him out of the past into the future just like a second before he was killed. And then and the reason for that is people who were really, really rich could afford to take
have
a new body,
yeah,
and have a new body and have their mind put in there, but he Free Jack that shit didn't happen, you know. But,
I haven't never
the
seen
movie
that
I was
one.
Talking about is the one in Australia. The okay, so some people call him infamous, I call him famous, and the dude was known in Australia like. Like Jesse James was known.
Oh, you're talking about Ned Kelly.
Yes, that's the one.
They done a movie, Kiss versus Dracula or something like that.
Oh, Kiss versus the Phantom of the Park.
Yeah, that's it. Phantom
that
of
was
the Park.
It was such a horrible movie. Oh my God.
It was terrible.
Hey, you know what? One movie I was really, really disappointed in is the Western, the dude that was played in all those Western movies with the big, great, big old mustache. And it was like,
Tom Elliott.
Yeah.
Sam
yeah.
Elliott.
The movie where, I killed Hitler and Sasquatch. That, oh man, I was so disappointed because the Sasquatch part was. Oh, it was so bad. It was so thick. I've never seen a bad movie that Tom Elliott had done, but that is one that was disgraceful.
The title put me off right away.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I spent money and bought it when it first came out.
What was the name of it?
Man who killed Hitler and Bigfoot.
Yeah.
You can watch it up on 123.ca movies.
I'll have to take a look for it.
You know, that was the biggest waste of money I've ever spent.
Yeah, now, just the title stopped me from even thinking about looking at it.
There was a pretty decent flick that came out a little while ago called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Oh, I love that movie.
He had a great line in there that I like to use on people, and they get really bent out of shape because it takes them a second to figure out what I just said to them. And the line goes like this.
Most
like,
people.
Sir, you are no more of a... What was it? You are no more of a great judge of human being than you are a specimen of one. And it takes them a second. They're like, what?
it's like a Western comedy movie, actually, you know?
Yeah, it's got like four different stories in it, and Buster Scruggs is kind of like the intermediary in the whole thing up until the end.
Ron, have you ever seen My Name Is Nobody?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a comical one.
That's a part of the Trinity series.
Yeah, the Trinity series. That's all Italian, and they dub English into it.
Well, yeah, and it always looks like the old Sergio Leone spaghetti westerns when they overdubbed all the voices. Mm-hmm. So it's always off just a little bit. And, you know, even Clint Eastwood stuff, and the voices never quite match the character that's being played or the actor. It's like the voice is way too deep for that guy, and it's really wrong for that one.
Yeah, it's like watching the old Godzilla movies.
Yeah, you ought to hear Star Trek in Spanish.
Oh wow!
Oh, I can imagine.
It don't even sound. You know, you hear Kirk talking. You know, supposedly in it. I mean, it just doesn't sound like Kirk, you know?
They don't have the pauses right.
You know that movie that came out like a year or two ago called White Noise?
Yeah.
You know what my very, very, very favorite part of that movie? My very favorite part of that movie is the end credits. End of the movie, the credits playing, where they're dancing in that grocery store. That's my very favorite part of that movie, is the end credits.
Oh. Why's hell getting up off the concrete?
You know, I don't know what the name of this movie was, but I watched, you know, talking about end credits. The awesome thing about those end credits is, you know, when they list, when they get down and they start listing, you know, give thanks to like the car rental company and, you know, the catering company. Well, in this end credits, when it came to listing the car rental company and catering and all that, they not only just listed the name of the catering company or car rental company, they listed every employee that worked for them. And yeah, those end credits lasted forever, but they gave credit to everyone, you know, and to me that was so awesome, you know. All these
well,
people
that might be what they got
would've...
paid.
Say again?
That might be they did their work for having the credits put on the page or put on the movie. People do
that.
Yeah, but
I mean, yeah, exactly. Who would do that? I mean, every single part, you know, they all say by this company, but instead of saying just they'd say this company. But then they would put the names of every employee in that company up there. And I've never seen that done before. And like I said, you know, that end credits took forever to roll up. and Beans, I'm talking about end credits. I'd like to give a shout out to, I'm losing my memory of the movie. I want to say the movie Got You, but it's not that. It's, Get Over It. You know, the movie Get Over It, on the very end of the movie, all the cast members got up and did a music video of the song September.
Well, speaking of credits, we're here just because of the credits of our listeners. So kick us a buck or two if you sure like what we're talking about. Got any ideas? Give us a yell. But remember, we're totally listener supported.
And without your listeners, we would not be here.
Nope. Well, I might be, but they might. They probably wouldn't.
Well, station-wise, but I mean, you stop and think of it. There's no one out there that on this large of a scale that totally works off of nothing but donations and no corporate sponsors. You know, that's amazing in itself, you know.
No, this actually costs me money to do the shows that I do. And I don't mind. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and a lot of these big shows on internet radio and stuff, you know, the people that do the shows have to pay the station to do the show, you know.
Well, they get corporate sponsors too. I mean, I see them all the time.
Right.
They get Black Rifle Coffee or this one, and they always interrupt it in the middle of their broadcast.
Yeah.
To say, you know, they have to mention their sponsors.
Yeah. So they're getting money both ways. They're getting money for the corporate sponsors, plus they're getting money that the people that are doing the shows pay them. They pay them to do their shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes Revolution Radio such a beautiful world. You know, it has heart and family. Most of all, Revolution Radio, the listeners, you know, over all these years and the people doing the shows, they're one big loving family. And that's what makes Revolution Radio the most wonderful thing in my heart to listen to.
Well, we're not bowing down to anybody. We don't have corporate sponsors that tell us what we can say, what we can't say, what topics we can speak on, or which, you know, political direction we have to do anything. Which is an issue with a lot of broadcast radio. I know the local bigwig DJ that's out here where I live, and I can hear it even on the radio. There's things that he holds back on and will not say.
You know. Speaking of which, what about this law they're trying to pass in Canada? It will take that freedom of speech completely away from them, having to register a podcast. You know,
oh yeah, they're
the government.
Yeah, a blackface Castro up there is clamping down like the totalitarian dictator that he is. And here's the thing with him is he is not popular in Canada, but because of the way that their election laws are set up, he won the being prime minister with only 30% of the vote. Okay, we have that too. You know, when we get a third party that has any kind of pull whatsoever, you know, this is how we wound up with Bill Clinton, because he won on the plurality also.
Well, you know, to me, Canada is like the miners. You know, they used to have the canary in the cage.
Yeah,
and when they saw the canary fall asleep, then they were pre-warned to get the hell out of Dodge, because, you know, that's why I see Canada is the canary. Over.
Yeah, and then they're my neighbors, literally to my north, not that far either. I'm about an hour or so from the Canadian border, and I can't even cross it anymore like it used to be able to do. You know, I have to go get a passport, and then I have to deal with the customs and all that other crap. So it's not quite the wide open border that it used to be. Unless I'm coming in from Canada, then I can cross in all I want to as long as I paint myself brown or something. But Canada has got to. I mean, we don't have a lot of room to talk down here in the States because look at what we got for a president.
Yeah, true.
But Canada's really got to band together and really push hard against Trudeau because he is a walking, talking nightmare for Canada. And look, like I said, we don't have a lot of room to talk either because what do we got? We got Biden and we got Kamala Harris coming up behind him if something happens to Biden. And believe me, if something did drastically happen in that phase, they would circle the wagons around Kamala Harris, the Democrats would, because coming up behind him now is Jim Jordan, who just got the speakership on Friday. And they absolutely do. The communists that are running the country right now do not want that guy to sit in the Oval Office.
So Jim Jordan, did he get it?
Yeah, they voted him in. Scalise dropped out because he was
Scalise was the nominee, but he dropped out
because the Liberty Movement in the Congress and the House would not vote for him, and he would not get the amount of votes that he needed to become Speaker. So he stepped aside. Jim Jordan, you know, he was one of Trump was backing him, and he was pretty popular in that regard. And so when they took the vote on Friday, he walked away with the speakership. So.
Well, I needed to know that because one of my nieces, she's like really she's libertarian to the point she's like a leader in, I mean, that's her job 24/7 and does a big podcast and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, you know, the difference between Canada now and used to be is I remember a long time ago, you know, back in the 70s or you know, early 70s, one of my cousins was up in Canada, and you know, the little figure they draw the nose hanging over and not two eyeballs. He drew that on a rock alongside the road. Right. And they subpoenaed him and brought him back to Canada to physically get up there and wash that paint back off those rocks.
Yeah,
they
didn't tolerate graffiti up in Canada.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was the punishment side. Instead of fighting him or throwing him in jail, they made him
physically.
Yep. That's what I love about this town I live in. You know, they do a lot of that same thing. In fact, last night I got the call. I'm still pissed off about this. Last night I got the cops called on me for playing my music too loud. Yeah.
What time of night was it?
It wasn't that loud though. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, still the way the cops handled it, my driveway is enclosed in a privacy fence.
Okay.
You know, if they wouldn't yelled or whatever, I probably wouldn't have heard them. But what they did is they rang. I'm one of few people that still has a landline, and they rang my landline and asked me to please turn my music down. And I apologized to them for, you know, I told them, I said, well, tell whoever complained, I apologize for playing my music too loud, and I'll keep it down.
That's a big difference between being in a smaller town versus a city. Because I don't deal with the police here. We only have 3 cops in this entire town. You're in a smaller town than I am. But in Los Angeles, you know, you deal with the cops out there. Number one, they're pissed off. They're tired. They're hamstrung by the city administration. So, you know, the crime in L.A. is like ridiculous. The D.A. there sucks, and he's very pro-criminal versus pro-cop. So you deal with the cops out there. They already have a bad attitude coming at you for anything whatsoever. The cops out here, I mean, I've met them. I've talked to them a couple of times. And it's just like, hey, bud, what's going on? It's like, wow, that's different. You know, you're not going to put me up against the wall and pat me down like the L.A. County does? You know, when I was riding my bicycle to work, they pulled me over and patted me down anyway. You know, you don't get that here. There's a huge difference between inner city law enforcement versus, you know, out in the middle of nowhere law enforcement. There's more of a cordial attitude towards people out here in the middle of the rural part of the country. So
it just proves to show you people living in cities are crazy.
Yeah, pretty much.
This town I live in is about 13,000. You know, the police department, city hall, police department, and fire department, you know, used to be located just not until just like a year or two ago, used to be only six, seven blocks away, you know, from me. But then they built a new city hall more into the center of what the city is nowadays. And so therefore, I don't hear the sirens near as often, you know, from the police department and fire department and all that. But what I love about where I live is I'm like close to downtown, but in the country at the same time, because I got this dry creek in my backyard and it's like woods you know, something I love about dry creeks is walking down in there and looking at the stones, you know.
When I left Los Angeles, I moved into a town that has less people in it than one city block of downtown LA.
Oh, wow.
So it's definitely.
It must be a great stress relief for you then.
It is and it isn't. Because I got very used to Los Angeles and the way things were out there, you know, and I got a lot of friends and everything still out there and whatever. And I moved out here. So it's just a different way of doing things. I mean, I don't dislike it or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's different. And then it takes an adjustment to deal with it because you're not dealing with the high stress of the way LA is set up. You know, you're talking about hearing sirens. You hear those like 3-4 times a day in LA. Out here, I hear them maybe once a week, if that.
Wow.
And, you know, and I've got my, you know, I'm able to grow my own food out here and do all that. So things that you can't do in LA, you can do here. But things here you can do here, you can't do in LA. So it's just, you know, it's just a different way of living. And it's all fine, you know. The only drawback for me is that I'm not near the ocean, whereas where I really would like to be, because I grew up on the ocean. I love being in the ocean, like swimming in the ocean and fishing and all that other stuff.
You tell me about it. I used to, when I was in the Army, I used to live in driving back and forth to the Army base. And I was living in Savannah, Georgia, and taking a crab net and taking a cast net, you know, catching crabs, catching shrimp. And
right.
Hey, I like to warn people out there that when you go casting a crab net in the ocean for the first time, because back in the day, you know, I would get that crab net up there and I would take one of those lead sinkers, put it in my mouth. Okay, you know, you're not supposed to do that nowadays, right? Yeah, lead poison. But yeah. Anyway, and then throw it out there. Well, I did that one time, and what I did not realize is on that net, on that sinker, was remnants of a jellyfish. And man, talk about pain on your mouth and your lips.
How numb did the side of your face go?
Oh, no kidding, man. That was horrible. It was a horrible, but it was a life learning experience. You know, that is what is wrong with society today.
Yeah, people don't learn that kids burn
their fingers to learn what fire is, you know?
Well, yeah, it was like when I was a kid, when I was at my grandparents' house out in the middle of Massachusetts and stuff, they had some cows. They had a whole fenced off area for the cows with an electric you know, the electric wire fence.
Oh.
And they got to be like, you know, we used to dare each other to spit on the electric fence. And you get zapped, and you, you know, you're like a little kid, and you're just like, oh, that. And you, what does your granddaddy tell you? Yeah, I bet you won't do that again, huh?
Hey. You know, I was raised up on a farm, and we had pasture with electric fence, and you know, when you skip and you're singing, you know, your kids, you're singing a song and you're skipping and you're all holding hands, and there's like four or five of you, and then
somebody
the one
walks into the fence.
Yeah, the one that's closest to the electric fence would grab it, but the person on the very end of the line holding hands would be the one that would absorb the shock.
Yeah.
At least I wasn't stupid enough to piss on the electric fence, you know?
Oh, I've heard about people doing that, and it's just kind of like, nah, I think I'm gonna take a pass on that one. You know, I think I respect my jewels a little bit too much.
What I remember most about electric fences on the farm is when I was, for some reason, I have an ability to remember at a very, very young age. And when I was like somewhere between 2 years old, two and a half, I remember, you know, the electric fence we had there. And then when I was like three and a half, we moved. And when we moved, then we got a new electric fence. And the new electric fence would pulsate. It'd go on and off. On and off, but the old electric fence was on all time. It never went off. And I remember our dog. I don't know how he did it, how what happened, but he ended up biting the electric fence. Oh. And he could not let go. And that is the purpose of why they reinvented the electric fence, to go on and off, so it would get it off to the point so you could let go. But as long as it's on, the dog could not let go. And I remember my dad yelling at my older brother, go, you know, because he had to run down to the barn. You go to the barn, shut it off, you know, and you know, yeah, because the dog couldn't let go until the fence, the electric fence was shut off.
The thing with the electric fence, it doesn't put enough juice through it enough to really do any hurt. It just shocks the piss out of you.
The electric fence, when we moved, when I was older, it had enough power where if a blade of grass grew up and fell against it, it would burn through the grass.
Okay.
And because I'll never forget, because, you know, as a youth, you know, when I was, you know, my early teens, I would go and repair the electric fence. And what you do is you take a pair of booster cables, right? You know, jumper cables, mm-hmm. And then you clip it onto the electric fence post, which is ground. And then you clip the other side toward the source of the electricity is coming from. And then you could work on the wire without getting shocked.
Right.
And I'll never forget, we had this cow, and it's my most beloved cow. I mean, as a child, I remember at nighttime, the cow would be laying down, chewing its cud, and I'd be curled up underneath its neck, and I'll never forget, remember the cow chewing its cud and feeling it swallow it down into its first stomach. Then you know, it would decide whether it needed to be chewed more, and then it'd bring it back up and keep chewing it. And I'll never forget. But that cow, we called it Pet, you know, because as a calf, you know, it was so tame, and it loved being scratched, you know, behind the crown of its head. And I'm working on this electric fence, and that cow come up and gave me a little nudge because it wanted to have its head scratched, right? And what I learned from that situation was, if I did not turn around right away and scratch that cow's head, the next nudge would send me through that electric fence.
That's funny. the cat would just give you a bump into the fence going, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
It, but see, well, but first, this is the thing, though. The kids that are growing up in the inner cities with all this crap, no, they're not learning any of this stuff. They're not learning because they're so insulated and they're packed in bubble wrap, and God forbid you hurt their feelings or say an offense or use the wrong pronouns or anything like that. They're not gonna learn any of this stuff. It's almost like we're becoming helpless as a nation with the next generations that are coming up behind us. And not everybody, but it's kind of catching on. We need to stop that. We need to start putting people out into and the kids and start getting them out there and starting to learn how to do stuff. I remember growing up, we used to know all the different kind of plants around where I lived and which ones were you could use and which ones were gonna like poison ivy and all that kind of stuff, which ones you had to stay away from. We used to know that. I guarantee you take some kid out there now, they won't know the difference between anything.
Well, the difference when I was a kid on those plants in North Dakota is, all I ever knew it's called burnweed, because man, if you walked up against one of those weeds, your skin would literally blister from it.
We had those up in
and what I didn't realize, I was like 50 years old before and long, long away from living in North Dakota, because the last time I lived in North Dakota, I was 18 years old, right? So by the time I was 50 is when I finally learned that the proper name for that plant was called stinging nettles. And that's when I learned that it's a very, very helpful plant. And somebody was trying to because we've been hogging up this show, and somebody was trying to talk, and we talked over them.
Yeah, who was that was trying to talk? It's like everybody else went away.
I'm here. I'm just eating Fritos.
You got the good ones with the Frito Bandito, or is that too racist now?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. Cheetos.
Cheetos.
Oh, I got a question for you, Matt. When it comes to Cheetos, you know, cheese puffs especially, you know, cheese puffs. Now, it's been like a year or two maybe since the last time I did research and looked at every different kind of brand of Cheetos, you know, cheese puffs, but practically every one of them has MSG in it, monosodium glutamate. One cheese puff that I found that does not have that in is the ones that, you know, the store brand that is sold in Aldi's. But stop, think again, you know, overseas, there's a lot of food additives that is illegal to put in the food over there that the United States people in this beautiful land of America.
Well, it's in with Chinese food, especially, and I don't know what the reason behind it is, but Chinese people, they love MSG.
One particular, I don't know if you want to call it a spice, whatever, but if you go into your grocery store and you look in the spice where they sell the spices, the one thing that they sell that I remember so much as a child, and it's accents, you know. Meat tenderizer, you know, in a can, you know, and I loved the crap out of it as a child. And I remember my oldest brother, he was very health conscious, and back then he knew about fluoride and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm putting all this accent on my hamburger, and he said, that's poison, you know, and I never realized that he was so right.
But what's in it?
Accent is 100% pure monosodium glutamate.
Okay, see, I never use this stuff, so I have no idea.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff out there that we need to avoid eating. Well, the thing is, now they get clever. I had to stop eating even like pretzels, and you know, I like pretzels, but you know, I have to stop eating certain brands of them because of some of the crap that they put in it.
Well, you know, the food industry is just like our government is today. You know, they changed the name of it to disguise of what it is, because just like our government, they changed the name of shit so they can pass their laws.
Well, they changed the name of Agent Orange into Roundup, so what does that tell you?
No, glyphosate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, and look what Roundup did, what Agent Orange did to all those guys over in Vietnam, and Vietnamese are still suffering from all of that today. But they simply changed the name. They changed it to Roundup. It was the same company. They still spray that crap everywhere. And it's just like, are you people not reading the warning labels?
Yes, the whole thing also is that gluten is not dangerous. It's the glyphosate that's quickened the harvest of the wheat.
Right.
Yeah, and they blame it on, exactly, Mona. And you know, name change the who you want to call guilty. You know, change the name so the guilty are innocent. You know, but look at all these countries that declare that will not buy our grain. Just because of the fact that the farmers are taking that chemical and spraying it on the fields to kill them, to kill the plant from growing, so right. The grain will ripen quicker. Well, you know?
It was in Vietnam. Yeah, that's what defoliated the flipping jungle.
Exactly.
Here's another thing too, Mona. Going back to like an earlier part of the show, what you guys were talking about. Are they GMOing weed? Are they GMOing marijuana now so that it can withstand Roundup? And you guys are like smoking it?
Well, first of all,
no,
testing.
I don't, so
there's rigid. Am I being hurt? Is my mic working?
Yeah,
right
you're
now?
On. You're on, Mac.
Go, mechanic. I'm eager to hear what you're going to tell us.
But you're talking over Mona.
Oh, sorry. No. Oh, I'm not sorry.
Okay, mechanic, you got the floor.
All right. Okay. So, cannabis, they are. Yeah, I lost my thought like 2 seconds ago.
I hate that when that happens.
We're talking about the glyphosate being in stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Marlboro, Philip Morris. Philip Morris, from my understanding right now, is engaged in the synthetic growth of cannabis sativa. And it's insulting. It's a disgusting notion. But that's what's happening. So it is out there. It is prevalent. Or it will be. But the testing, especially in California, the testing on the cannabis out here before it even gets to market is... I mean, it's pretty top notch, you know. I doubt that some synthetic plant would make its way through unless they were to change all of the requirements. I mean, they check for solvents, they check for pesticides, they check for all of it. You know, so even in the edibles are highly, highly regulated, you know. So I feel pretty good that, you know, I'm going to smoke weed till the day I die. I love marijuana. I love cannabis.
Right? Yeah, and, I'm with you there, McCain.
It's a part of my lifestyle. It just is what it is. It's a lifestyle. Right. It's not just something I do on the weekends. And for me, it's a plant that has introduced me to much of my consciousness. It has allowed me to absorb, I think, much more than I would have had I just been going through just work and whatever sport and then go home and sleep and don't get creative and don't open up your mind and don't do anything. Just be, you know, I can't do that. That's just not me. It's never been me.
You know what movie popped in my head when you said that? Reefer Madness.
Oh yeah. Hey, there's two different versions of that. You know, I mean, there's the old original black and white version.
Right.
And then there's the newer one and they're two totally different.
Well, Reefer Madness, for people that don't know, if you are back in the day,
propaganda.
You know, propaganda was at its...
Right.
When propaganda was at its...
Gateway drug, too. Did you know it was a gateway drug, too?
When the propaganda was at its full prime, right. When they were trying to get rid of him, they convinced many people of America that when black people went out and smoked weed, they went out and raped white women.
Oh, jeez.
Because I'm gonna smoke weed and I'm gonna go right to heroin right after that.
Yeah, I want to smoke weed and then go commit rape. Okay, that just makes no sense.
I don't know about you, but
I'm a veteran smoker. I've never had the inclination. There you go.
Well, how many people do you know that are to smoke weed that get so hyped up that that's what they go out and they start committing acts of violence? Usually it calms people down.
Well, unless you're feeling fun and want to paper a tree or somebody's car, you know, toilet paper.
Well, as far as consuming something that would make you want to do something like that, it would be whiskey, you know?
Yeah, but it had PCP. To be laced with something.
PCP,
new.
Bro. PCP, angel dust.
Oh, gross.
Oh, that stuff, that's on a whole different level right there.
Well, yeah,
PCP, I've never seen a video of a guy on PCP in the 90s because that's when it was most prevalent. PCP was everywhere in the 90s.
Really?
This dude,
but in the 70s.
This dude running from the cops, no shirt, all hyped up on it. I guess somebody put a joint with some PCP on it, on the joint. And he smoked it, and he flipped out. Turned out this dude was like the owner of a dojo. And for those of you who don't know, that's where they teach you karate or martial arts. He was the owner of a dojo, and he's running from these cops, got his shirt off, and they send in the canine. He knocks the canine out. Like, canine comes running at him. Dude, roundhouse, canine done. And about 9 cops come at this guy, and he starts dropping them. There's a video of it. It's probably pretty hazy now. I doubt it's out there anymore. But turns out the guy was he ended up getting taken down. They took him into the jail. But tested positive for PCP, cannabis, all kinds of shit. He got set up. It wasn't his idea. What? Somebody gave him a bad joint.
Well, in certain situations, I can give people. Well, I think what it does is it hooks you up with your inner mind, and once you're hooked up, nothing can stop you. Now, to give you an instance, I was partying on many years ago. My next door neighbors, so I was partying with them, and we're on their back porch, you know, back deck, and I was drunk as shit and high, and I decided to go into the house. And then, you know, everyone there, you know, they saw how high I was and thought, no, you, dude, you're so high, you just need to sit down and just stay put. And I was determined to go in that house. And there were 3 or 4 of them that tried to stop me from going in the house. And I grabbed hold of the door jams and I pulled myself in and dragged all those people in with me, you know? So it's a state of mind, you know?
Yeah. Well, the thing you got to worry about now with people buying weed off the street is the fact that they're sticking fentanyl in it now.
That's what I was thinking about earlier.
Yeah, that's a kind of an issue, because fentanyl just kills you.
That is what I like about mechanic talking about, you know, I love pure weed. You know, pure weed is awesome. But nowadays, if you're buying it, you know.
Do you go through a dispensary?
And here's the thing.
You're probably going to get, top shelf. If you go black market, you just don't know what you're going to get. Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say, as with everything else, when the government gets involved, everything gets screwed up.
Right.
Like they did in California when they legalized weed. They said, well, you know, it's going to bring in a bunch of revenue because people are smoking it anyway.
And you know, they ran the whole sales pitch. So all these medical marijuana places popped up, and then, of course, it just turned into recreational anyway. But they taxed it so much that it became so expensive that people are going back to dealing with the street vendors to get their weed.
Yep. Hey, you know, right now here in Arkansas, you know, they passed a law or rule, whatever you want to call it, that people that are on medical marijuana, you know, because medical marijuana is the only thing we have here right now. But they had passed a law saying, you know, people on medical marijuana are allowed to own firearms. And now the federal government is challenging that law right now.
Well,
and
well, I don't hey, know first how of all, that, hey, Daryl. Hey, yeah. Daryl. I got some good news for you, brother. There's case law by a federal judge, took place a year and a half ago, that overruled. They tried to take this dude's gun because he had like three or four joints in his house, and you know, he was a regular smoker of marijuana, and they tried to take his guns, and they took him and went to court, and he appealed, and finally won. A federal judge ruled that the mere possession or habitual use of marijuana is not enough to suspend or remove one's Second Amendment. Thank you very much.
Well, look at Hunter Biden.
Oh, now that's a whole different story. Don't bring up that.
That guy's doing cocaine with minors and a pistol. He's got an illegal gun.
No.
With cocaine with a minor.
Okay, yeah, Put all of that stuff aside. This guy, when he bought a bought his handgun, he lied on a federal form, okay, which, by the way, is a felony. You will go to jail for it. The ATF puts people in prison for it all the time, and he's getting a slap on the wrist for it. Yeah. Everybody else –
they took the charge away. They threw the charge out,
I think he's getting a misdemeanor, but they're still trying to push the felony charge on him. I think they're trying to run
the misdemeanor out. To get the felony charge, you watch.
Yeah.
Better get some good lawyers.
You know, that's something I love about the state I live in, you know, here in Arkansas, is they're against all that shit. I mean, they're against the transgender men participating in women's sports, and they're against they're totally against the you know, children being able to change their sex without their parents' approval and that kind of stuff. And what really, really made me proud of living in Arkansas is back when the peak of COVID was happening, and in Washington State, you're banned. You are not allowed to go fishing. And in Arkansas, they did the exact opposite thing. During COVID in Arkansas, they told everyone, you can go fishing without a fishing license.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no permit needed.
Well, why do you need a permit? Why do you have to ask permission
from
the government to go fishing anyway?
You don't. You can go to court.
Well, I mean, that's besides the point. But I mean, you know, still, you know, I mean, you know.
Here's a bigger question. Why do we need permission from the government to do anything anyway?
I agree.
Going back, and this one I'm going to hit Mona with. Aren't you tired of men canceling out women at this point in sports, in beauty pageants, and all the rest of it?
Yeah.
I mean, they're canceling women. I hate to break the news to everybody, but I kind of like women, and I'd like them to stay women. And
they had this one meme, and the guy, he was 172 in this sport as a man, but he came up to 45th as a female. Like, come on.
Hey, listen, this is a free country, and if you don't like your life as a male, just put on a one-piece, bro.
I'll tell you what, I don't want to see you men give birth.
Well, they can't. It's a biological impossibility.
They are working on that big time. They want to implant a uterus in a man.
But
they really, really do.
Why would you want to cancel out women?
Because, look, women are procreators. Without women, you don't procreate. That's it. You can have a bunch of men on an island. They'll all be dead over a matter of time. You put one man and 10 women on an island, you watch it flourish. Watch it flourish.
Well, it's like somebody said, if you put 100 people on an island, 100 men on an island plus 10 women, 1,000 years from now, they're going to dig up the bones and they're going to find 100 men and 10 women. You put 100 men plus 10 trans women on an island, and in 1,000 years, they're going to dig up 110 men.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just too true. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't care if you like humping men or whatever, but I don't need to know about it. And I don't
care if people want to live their life the way they want to live their life. But at the same time, they're invading all these institutions that they shouldn't be in.
Right.
No,
do it.
I don't have to accept it. Okay, whatever. I'm not going to be force-fed LGBTQ. I'm not going to do it.
I know.
They live their own life. No, their life is already intrusive. Their lifestyle is intrusive to our lifestyle, which came first. All right? I don't have to buy into their construct, period, at all. I have zero obligation to. You're a faggot. All right?
That's right. That
you're
was
a
my
fag,
word.
Okay?
Well, it's
you
want become...
to call me a cis male? You're a fag. All right? That's where my head's at.
It's become you sort of like a social credit thing, or a social standing. Right. When I was watching these parents parade their kids around like trophies, this one woman had her son dressed up like a girl, and I was... And when we were out there protesting the all ages drag show, it was just like, do you realize what you're doing to your kid?
But you're talking California, right?
No, I'm talking Wisconsin.
Are you really cool?
Oh, really?
Sweet.
Yeah, I was out there protesting with the all ages drag show with a bunch of other people, and the Gays Against Groomers were there.
Nice.
A Christian group. I don't know who they were. They showed up and they were standing with everybody. And we were watching these parents drag their kids into this all ages drag show. All, their little boys were all made up like girls. And it was just like, do you have any idea how much this kid is going to hate you when they hit like 20 years old? Because you messed up their entire life.
Yeah, but some children really do.
And there's been plenty of stories, right, Mona? Right, Nick? Plenty of evidence to lead to what typically happens. Detransition, regret.
Oh,
is
unbelievable.
It is a real thing.
Big,
and the
big
media, the media, you could tell they're bought and paid for, because they will never talk about people like Chloe Chloe or Chloe or Chloe.
Yeah, yeah,
Chloe,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
A biological female who was convinced that she was a boy by her school. Chopped off her breasts, packed her full of hormone blockers, ruined her puberty, jacked up her voice, gave her a hairline. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw this one interview that I don't know if you're familiar with Blair White.
Yeah, Blair White. That's just disgusting.
Well, whatever, but I saw this interview that she did or he did. With this other transsexual girl, whatever, who is regretting the whole procedure.
Yeah, detransition.
And was having a mental breakdown, because there's no going back once it's done.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. They tell you could just stop. Hey, no. Hey, Nick, you could just stop taking the hormones anytime.
No,
they
went through the entire procedure, including the surgery.
Oh,
and it was like, I don't remember what the trans girl's name was, but even during the interview, he was having a complete mental breakdown, because there's no going back, and was regretting the entire transition process.
They can't change the genes.
No, you can't. There's XXXY. That's what it is.
There are so many interviews out there that I've seen with people who had the sex change, and like the lesser of the sex changes was having their breast removed, and then they changed their mind later on in life, and they regret it so much because if they have a baby, they will not be able to breastfeed their baby.
Yeah, and you know what?
Breast milk is the most healthiest thing you can do for a baby.
Yeah,
it
I was going to say.
Most important.
Breastfeeding.
Don't worry,
is...
we lose them after we've breastfed all them babies, okay?
Okay, they get saggy.
Well,
okay. You
know, no, but breastfeeding is probably the best thing that you can do for them.
I got
up.
Trouble for breastfeeding in a restaurant with a blanket wrapped around me and the kid. Child.
Oh, well, that was old days. That was a while ago. Nowadays, you can just do it
nowadays,
right up in
the
open.
The person reporting it gets in trouble.
Yeah,
the girls
no kidding.
Do not want to do it. The girls think it's more important to have a career than it is to raise a family. They've been untrained for the family society.
You know, but, you know, in a way, you know, you think about these tribes in Africa that are in the middle of nowhere that's never been around civilization. They are, like, more advanced than us because they walk around with their breast exposed. You know, it's everyday life, you know. Why have we been
more advanced than us?
Why have we been shamed into thinking it's a sin to have the breasts exposed, you know? I mean, why, you know?
Oh, it's not. Haven't you turned on the movies? There's tits everywhere. Gosh.
Yeah, but you got to remember, when you go to, like, some of the big cities like San Francisco, L.A., New York, or whatever, those tits are on guys.
Oh, that's...
Yep. They got a bonus package for you,
okay,
Mom.
That's not a something I want to really... And they're hairy.
Oh,
I
God.
Prefer my women without a penis. Just saying.
There you go. I know, right?
I know. That's kind of radical idea.
My preference. You know, my preference.
That's a radical idea to have a woman who doesn't have a pecker.
Well, I don't think that it has to be flaunted either, one way or the other.
That's the whole point of the agenda, though, Mona, is that they do. It is being flaunted. It is being pushed in everybody's face for a reason. And it's not for... You know, yeah. LGBT
so
or XYZ rights has nothing to do with that. It's they're trying to change the culture in a radically Marxist direction.
It's trans Maoism, Daryl. Hey, Susie Q in chat, she makes a great statement. At the time they are having their breasts cut off, child rearing is at the very last things of their minds. That's the thing. These little kids, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old, or even younger, I guess. If they're not being told, even when they're younger, when they're taking the hormone blockers, hey, this will affect your ability to have children. Cutting off your breasts will affect your ability to feed any children you might be able to have or not have. And they're not being told this when they're going into these counseling sessions, whether or not to take the hormone blockers. They're being specifically told not to tell the parents. That's a whole other battle that's being fought right now.
Exactly.
All kinds of stuff. Your governor of California tried to pass a law making it illegal for the school to tell the parents their kid was transitioning. You got to be kidding me.
Well,
yeah, I know. Doesn't it make you want to just punch a bunch of assholes right out?
Yeah. Going through the hormone process itself sterilizes whoever's doing it anyway. So they're never going to have kids anyhow. I don't get male or female. The hormone, the blockers, and the hormone treatments actually sterilize the person that's going through it.
Well, it's called lupron, isn't it? It's what they use to castrate. It's a chemical castration process for prisoners.
Yeah, they. If you ever saw that documentary that Matt Walsh did, What is a Woman? He asked one of the psychologists or whatever who was treating some of these kids, he asked him about that. So, how do you feel about giving, you know, these chemicals to kids that are giving to sex offenders? It's for chemical castration. And the woman she was, he was talking to said, I think we're done with this interview.
Yeah, she had no answer.
Yeah, I'd like to point out something here, as you know, because they've been doing that for a long time, and it's when we got away from using glass bottles. It's called plastic.
Oh yeah, with the bisphenol that was leaking out from the plastics into the water.
Anyway, we've got about 5 minutes, guys.
So. I mean, it's ridiculous the crap that we've been all put through. They're canceling out women. They're turning boys into girls and girls into boys. There's a massive communist conspiracy thing that's going on that people don't seem to want to recognize. And we're going broke doing it. Oh, yeah, by the way, real good weed is good for you. So, but they don't want to say that either.
I mean, dude, okay, it is blown up. Thanks for having me, Painter. I appreciate it. 50-50 chance I'm on tonight, 1 hour from midnight on the West Coast. Studio A, the McKinnon. Yeah, late night with the McKinnon.
Something I like to say is the last time general marijuana use being introduced as a bill here in Arkansas failed, and it was mainly because it was introduced by the big pharma people, you know, trying to do it. And in that bill, you know, the reason I voted for it, but if I would have studied better, I would not have voted for it, because mainly because in that bill, you were not allowed to grow your own number of plants on your own land for yourself.
Right. So that's the thing. You have to read the bills that you're voting for, because it's all in the last third of the pages. That's the meat of it. You have to know them to read the small print. That's all I can say.
Yeah, and that's why I'm glad that Arkansas, they read that small print, but Missouri, about the same time, they did not read that small print, and they're shivering from the end results from that now.
Yeah.
In Missouri.
All right. So we only got about a minute left, and want to remind everybody once again, please send us some money. So hit that donation button up at the top of the homepage there and show us some love to help keep us on the air.
Yeah. If you may not love this show, but surely there's a Revolution Radio has such a wide.
I love this show. Everybody's just like.
I love this show, but I'm just saying, you know, maybe there's people out there that not that crazy about this show, but there's such a wide variety of shows on every topic. Surely there's one show that you love.
Hey, don't listen.
Donate for that show. You know, keep that show going on. You know.
Love you guys.
Up next is Robert Morningstar with Morningstar Report. I sure appreciate y'all joining us. It was a good show. Y'all have a good afternoon. This is Revolution Radio.
Bye, everybody.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.